commando unit was sent to prison by a military court for a crime they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from maximum security stockade to the Los Angeles underground. Today, still wanted by the government, they survive as soldiers of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can hire...
Celsius Hockey.
Welcome to another Big Fake Radio Show. Joining me as always is new Larry, Kevin Jank.
If you wish to work out, you forgot your pants.
Joke's on you. I never wear pants. That's a quote from the movie we're watching this evening, Revenge of the Ninja, from 1983, I believe. And the man who picked this film is my personal attorney, spiritual advisor, Tuffy.
Hey, look, Superman.
I don't remember that one.
That was when the little kid was fighting the guy in the hot tub area.
Right. So that many little hot tub scenes.
I need a movie with that little kid versus Gary Coleman one-on-one.
Oh, my God. He would whoop the shit out of Gary Coleman. I think he'd even beat him in a foot race.
This kid's awesome. Listen, last week we established that Alf is probably a lock for best actor in the Golden Quesadilla category. Yeah. But this little kid's a contender. He's amazing.
He was clearly doing his own stunts, so yeah.
It's unbelievable. All right, but we'll get into that.
He even ran himself into a door once, you know?
that was his toughest opponent, a door. All right.
Him and Shockma.
So we'll talk about... I always love a Shockma reference. We will talk about Revenge of the Ninja, and then Tuffy and I need to recap WrestleMania. What a glorious weekend it was.
And yes, then, indeed.
Jank, I hear tell he even watched a little bit of it.
Sure. Right, oh, I saw segments.
And then Jank might have a top 11 for us. Probably put that in. Probably put that before the WrestleMania recap. And but before we get started here, I think we would be remiss if we didn't check with Tuffy.
Yeah.
And ask about the solar eclipse.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was spectacular.
So remind everybody, Tuffy, you drove where exactly?
Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
Wow. And like this was a thing with a bunch of people. Yeah, like a bunch of people were there. Or?
Yeah, $20 for an adult. Kids were free.
Okay, now what was different about this?
Yeah, can you stay in the parking lot and see it just the same?
That's what I was wondering.
Well, yeah. I mean, mostly it's because like in 2017, I went to Carbondale, Illinois, because one of my friends had a friend who lived down there, so we just. And stay at their house and had somewhere to be. And like you could have just gone to any, you know, Walmart parking lot or whatever, but one, who doesn't want to go to Indy, you know, Indy Motor Speedway.
Right here. This guy. Right here.
You know, the home of the Indy 500, the world center of racing. I forget what their actual slogan is, but something like that. But yeah, this was like you have a place that has bathrooms that you can use.
Okay. So do area restaurants right around there, but all right,
yeah. Yeah, but they're not just going to let any Joe off the street on eclipse day, you know? They're probably watching patrons only.
Well, you might have to buy a Coke or something for a dollar instead of $20.
You might have an Ed situation where he's going place to place and has to shit in a parking lot.
Then another advantage is they do have concessions at the Speedway, so I can get myself a bratwurst to eat.
Bratwurst? Huh.
Yeah.
But you're sitting around with, like, Joe and Sally America at the Speedway, looking up at the sky.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also a huge facility, so it's like I think they were expecting about 50,000 people at the Speedway.
Wow.
That's probably about what they had.
Holy hell, 50,000 idiots. I mean, great people looking up at the sky. But this is like a field day for pickpockets. Everyone's just sitting around looking up.
Yeah. I mean, I did not get pickpocketed. Right. I didn't see a lot of people doing pickpocketing. But
well, that's good. Did you have your special glasses?
Yeah. They were giving them out for free. I already bought some off Amazon, so I was covered with glasses.
Man, this is like wow. Super Bowl. He is so excited. Yeah. About
it. Well, it was like $10 for 10 pairs on Amazon. That ain't, you know, that was fine.
Good thing you have 10 pairs of eyes.
That's like not even one pull on champions these days, you know?
Yeah, I know. But, well, hopefully the glasses were effective, because what if you got like a cheap knockoff glasses and then you look up and you now you're blind?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're just 3D glasses. I was
too worried about it.
You did pay top dollar for those. $10 for $10.
Right? Yeah.
So, all right. Did they have like a show or something? Was there dancers or what was the what was the attraction to go to the speedway? I don't know.
Just because that was in the path of totality, and because the whole point is to be in the total eclipse, not just the partial eclipse, because it makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
Because Chuffy did post a picture on the
glasses off at some point.
He did put the picture on Twitter's.
Yeah, the picture doesn't do it justice either.
I mean, it looks exactly like you would expect it to be, black disc surrounded by a little bit of white. Yeah,
but in person, it is way better. I don't know what to say.
The blacks are so much deeper.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, we could call my mom and get her to attest, because she also came down.
Oh, so you drove down with your mom?
No, my brother who lives up in Northwest Indiana, she drove to his house and then she rode with him on down because he came down too.
All right, so you, your brother, and your mom, and you found each other at the Speedway, I take it?
Yeah, and his wife and two kids. And then
holy hell, it's a family affair.
And
I noticed your old man wasn't involved. Where was he at?
Tax season.
He just says, I'm out. Tax season.
Can't take a day off. He's busy. Ask Jay.
Yeah, know how that goes. You can't take any time off this time of year.
Yeah, we even had to reschedule Flea Market Fantasy the last few weeks.
Yeah, might happen again this week.
So, yeah, so India's about 3 hours from where I'm at. So it took me about 3 hours to get there. And then the last, you know, like maybe mile or so, you were in traffic waiting to get in the parking lots.
Holy
like you would be at any sporting event, because people, you know, they get there a little bit at a time. Some people probably got there Saturday, some people Sunday, and then I got there Monday morning. And then, like, the NASA had stuff set up there. Purdue University had stuff set up, but that was all on, like, the front straightaway. I was I didn't go check any of that stuff out.
Well, I didn't buy a
shirt. Maybe buy a shirt.
What does the shirt say?
It was just from some guy on the street, hawking shirts outside the speedway. It says, the sun's getting mooned, and then it has a little cartoon picture of a sun and a moon on there. It says, total solar eclipse.
The sun's getting mooned. He's been waiting for that one.
Twitter for you, Mike Bell.
Yeah, that will be nice. So how was, like, the crowd when – was there a palpable anticipation, like an energy going through the crowd when it was
– Oh, yes. Absolutely. People were, like, cheering and clapping when it got to totality.
What are we doing? Is this – all right, anyway.
You got to – you know, don't be so negative, Mike Dell.
All right, I guess. I don't know.
It was well worth it because this is the part that's even worse because, you know, people kind of stream in over the couple days leading up to it getting there, but then everybody leaves at once.
Oh, yeah.
So it took me about 2 hours to cover the first 30 miles on the way out. Then I stopped at a little rest stop there on the interstate. You know, use a bathroom, burn a dart. And then as I'm standing there with my buddy getting ready to go back to Springfield, he looks on Google Maps and goes, oh, looks like there's an accident. Does 9 minutes extra. So it's like, that's annoying. But we were out of the heaviest traffic. It was starting to move finally. So we get back on the interstate and 5 minutes we're in the gridlock again. Now it says like plus 16 minutes. And then you check again 10 minutes later, it says plus 25 minutes. You check another 20 minutes later, it still says plus 25 minutes.
Did I miss the point earlier when you said you went with a buddy? So you had a buddy with you?
Yes.
Well, first of all, I thought Jank and I were your only buddies, so I'm a little disappointed.
And at least two other friends.
Wow.
And one of them is into the eclipse.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
So, yeah, that backed us up like another hour, and it took just over 6 hours to get back home.
Oh, man. My God. That would drive me insane.
Yes. Jake, like hearing this description, Jake, driving all that way, getting stuck in traffic, getting there, then being surrounded by 50,000 people in a auto speedway, and then taking 6 hours to get back home. Does that sound like the worst thing ever? Like, can you think of anything?
Yeah, that doesn't sound great.
Oh.
I could almost see going
to Indianapolis just to get close enough to see it, but going to the actual, stadium and all that, that sounds like too much for me.
I don't think you understand the scale of how big a speedway is. Like 50,000 people, you barely even notice other people were there. It's so spread out.
That's a lot of people. I'll tell you who I noticed, all the people around me during the eclipse. No one, because I was in my room and I looked out the window and I could see things get a little bit darker, like it was going to rain. And I think I heard one bird like, go, ah, or something like that. And then, and that was it. And then I just noticed the window getting brighter.
Not watching the news. He didn't know about the eclipse.
Yeah. He didn't know what was going on. And that was the eclipse for me. It was great.
Yeah.
We got to actually go outside at work and watch it, so that was something.
Oh, nice.
I can't stress this enough. The difference between a 99% eclipse and a 100% eclipse is a big difference.
Tuffy's a 100%. The
difference between 2 inches and 10 inches.
Well, Tuffy, I'm glad you had fun. You enjoyed it. What an experience it was.
I recommend in 2045 you get down
down like Arkansas. I will definitely be dead by then.
Yeah. Man, I'd be something, huh? How old would I be? And I'd be 70 years old.
You can go to Australia in like a decade or so.
Oh.
Is that near Giant Eagle, Australia?
I think it's just around the corner from Giant Eagle.
All right, well, then maybe I'll make it. Oh, yeah. Sorry, there's Tuffy's eclipse experience. I'm proud of you, Tuffy. Good job. It's a hell of a...
Living a life.
Yeah, look at me, getting out of the house.
I know, it's crazy. Dude, it's been raining nonstop here all week, like very heavily. I guess places are flooding, so I have not left the house at all. Not at all, so... good times. How about you, Jank? Any big story? You said they let you out of work to go look at the eclipse, or is everyone impressed at work?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had a couple of pairs of glasses to kind of pass around, and we also had...
Sharing glasses?
Yeah.
Just when I thought it couldn't get worse, there is no way of putting someone else's glasses on my face. Get the fuck out of here, that stuff. Yeah.
We had a couple of, like, welders things, like these little square things that, like... You can weld with. So we had some of those to go around too. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Was it everything you hoped it'd be?
It was cool enough, I guess. Didn't get as dark as I thought it would.
Yeah. All right.
It's just kind of dark.
So, all right. I guess that's it. Revenge of the Ninja?
Sure.
Yeah.
That's good. Tuffy, how did you, you just said it recommended it to you on the Tubies. That's how you found
it? Just popped up on Tubi. Delivered another nugget of gold for us.
Another winner. This movie is pretty great. I'm just going to say it right up front.
Yeah.
All right, here's the IMDb description. After Ninja's killed his family, Cho and his son Kane come to America to start a new life. He opens a doll shop, but is unwittingly... See, he hasn't really opened a doll shop, though.
Well, he does. At least he thinks he does.
But I thought they were just... I thought it was like an art gallery, and they were importing dolls. Yeah. But anyway. He opens a doll shop, but is unwittingly importing heroin in the dolls. But his, but his friends...
Just like Lost, with those Virgin Mary statues full of heroin.
I don't know that. But when his friend betrays him, Cho must prepare for the ultimate battle. So in Lost, they had Virgin Mary statues with.
Yeah, there's a whole plane full of them.
No idea. the director, I guess this was made by Canon Films, right?
Yeah, Golan and Globus.
Yeah. And Cenk, would you like to tell the people who, like, what they're famous for? Canon Films?
Just all kinds of terrible 80s films.
there you go.
Masters of the Universe and some of, like, the later Death Wish movies. I think, like, Superman 4, like, that terrible movie. pretty much anything that was terrible, like, they probably had a hand in it in the 80s.
This movie actually gets a 6 on IMDb, which is pretty high for IMDb.
Yeah.
6. The director here is Sam Furstenberg. He's very good. But you may, he directed some other Canon films, including Breaking 2 Electric Boogaloo.
Nice.
Yeah. Is that what it's called, Breaking 2, or is it something else?
Yep. No, that's it.
All right. Everyone knows the Electric Boogaloo part, but the break. I actually saw that in the theaters.
You're a lucky boy.
My buddy won some like movie tickets. That's doing something. I don't know. And he said, "Hey, you want to go to the movies?" And I was like, "Yeah, let's go to the movies." And it was Breaking 2 Electric Boogaloo. On the day that
you
was.
Never spoke to him again.
And the stars of this movie are a fellow named Sho Kasugi. And he plays Cho, the hero of the film.
He's not really the hero.
Yeah, that's true.
The hero is.
Yeah, his son Kane is played by Kane Kasugi, who is Cho's real life son. So they play father and son in the movie. And then they're father and son in real life. Now this Sho Kasugi fellow, there are three of these ninja movies: Enter the Ninja, Revenge of the Ninja, and I don't know, Ninja 3. I can't remember the other one.
Yeah.
And this show guy, he was in all three movies, but he played a different character in all three movies. Like, the movies are not connected at all. There's three movies about ninjas, but they don't have the same characters, I guess. So.
That is weird. It's like the American Horror Story of ninja films.
Yeah, so, yeah, his little kid's in here. There's a fellow named Arthur Roberts in here. He plays Braden, the evil guy. Now, when I tweeted out that we're watching this movie, I put up a picture of the poster, and they can see who's in the cast and everything. And our buddy the Dave responded with one of Arthur Roberts' three best films. Now, I took that as a joke, you know, and I responded with, "Yeah, he's very good." But do you think anyone knows who this fella is? That was a joke, right?
I'm assuming because he was listed on the poster as an actor or something, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he was listed on the poster. So I'm assuming that Dave is just cracking wise, but I don't know if he actually.
Might be a big fan. Yeah, I don't know.
Someone knows who this is.
I mean, Arthur Roberts is still getting work.
Ah, there you go. Good on you, Arthur Roberts. And there's no one else famous in this movie, right? Like, there's nothing.
No, I don't think so.
I mean, is that blonde lady in anything? Like, she seems like she would have been in something.
She's an attractive blonde in the 80s, so yeah, she may be. Ashley Farrar is her name. She plays Kathy. Opening up her little IMDb here. Let's see. Well, it says Ashley Farrar is known for Revenge of the Ninja, Cyclone, and The Master. So.
Huh. I guess that's
it. Those are the three movies.
That sumo guard guy, he was a professional wrestler in the 60s and 70s.
He did look very familiar to me.
Listen to the guy who played
one point in 1967. He was the number one contender to champion Bruno Sammartino.
Professor Toru Tanaka.
He wasn't the butler guy in Pee Wee's Big Adventure, was he? He kind of looked like that guy.
I don't even remember that guy.
Yeah, when Pee Wee goes to Francis Buxton's house and he's like knocking on the door and. He's like, Francis is busy. He's taking his bath. And they're like, no, really? Where are they hosing him down?
Where are they hosing him down? He's actually been in a lot of stuff. Like, hey, Cenk, he's in a movie called Tax Season.
Oh. Why are we not doing that movie?
He is in Darkman, Martial Art, Dragnet, the TV.
Oh, Darkman. I love Darkman.
Really?
Yeah, it's good. Sam Raimi, early superhero movie.
Spencer Farr. Oh, he was in the New Monkees. How dare they make New Monkees? He's in an episode of The A-Team. Pretty good. Best of WWF Volume 2 as Professor Toru Tanaka.
Ooh.
And he was Pee-wee's Big Adventure butler.
Hey!
Oh.
All right.
Nailed it. He played a wrestler in Night Court. Yeah, he's been in a lot of stuff. So get on you, Professor Tanaka.
Most famous guy in this movie.
Yeah, probably. So, all right, I think that's all the background we have on this because no one cares.
Yeah. Right.
So yeah, that's basically the premise. And I guess when this movie was shot, they where did they want to film it? In like L.A. or something, and the permits would be too much. So instead they went to Salt Lake City. So,
Good.
Hey, by the way, the Arizona Coyotes are moving to Salt Lake City. It was announced.
Really?
Yeah.
So, well, the good news is there's a nice playground they can go have a karate fight on.
So, all right. What else was I going to say about this? Any other trivia I learned about it? They have a lot of trivia notes on the IMDb page about this movie. And I guess this movie actually made money, like a good bit of money when it came
wow.
out. Yeah. And nothing is coming to mind at the moment. So let's keep moving. All right, Duffy, how does this movie start?
With a guy's family getting slaughtered by ninjas.
That's what I wanted to say. That was the other thing I was going to mention. I guess the first cut of this film, whoever the producer or whatever looked at it and like, yeah, this makes no sense. We got to redo all this. And they added this scene to the front of the movie to like.
Oh, because with this, everything makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Yeah. The rest of it flows naturally.
But. Describe this opening scene for everybody, Tubby.
You know, there's a family just hanging out at their house in Japan, and there are ninjas just creeping around every corner in really just in broad view of the people, but they don't notice them for whatever reason. And, yeah, I think one guy sees the ninjas, and they just all descend, and they... slice one lady's throat. They throw a ninja star into one lady's forehead. They kill a child.
Yeah, the ninja star in the forehead was the little kid.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's really got to be one of the best deaths. We're talking a little kid, like a 6-year-old kid. Like, there's no way they're going to kill him. Because at first, like, the ninjas slice the throats and they kill a couple ladies. And then the one ninja, like, runs away, like, leaving the kid there. Like, he's still chasing someone else. So they're like, oh, they're not going to kill the kid, obviously. But no, then a ninja star just comes flying out of nowhere, hits him right in the eye.
Yeah. Fuck that kid, is what they said.
Yep.
And then Cho's wife, this good-looking lady, she's running around. Everyone's wearing, like, kimonos and everything. And she's has a baby, Cho's baby, and little baby Kane, and she's running trying to like protect the baby, and she hides him in some bushes.
Yeah.
I don't know why the ninjas couldn't hear the baby crying in the bushes. The audience could. I don't know if the ninjas couldn't. But then she comes back and then she gets, how do they get her with an arrow or something?
Yeah, they shoot her right through the heart with an arrow.
Yeah. So it's a hell of an opening. Just people getting murdered left and right, women and children. So, well, they're about to, they just kill her, and all the ninjas are looking around like at a job well done. And then they hear Cho and his buddy Braden, this white American fella, coming down, and they're like, oh, let's go hide because we're ninjas. So they go and hide, and then Cho walks up and he sees his whole family slaughtered, including his beautiful wife. And he's like, what is going on here? And then the ninjas cop start jumping out at him again, Jank, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Start shooting arrows at him. He grabs one with his right hand, grabs one with his left hand, and then smoothly just grabs one with his mouth, just right out of the air.
I was amazed. This movie is so, I was so in, right? Top of this movie.
Oh, so great. So ridiculous.
And they had a big fight scene. Like, he's like in these tall bamboo shafts. And, like, they're fighting.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool. But he beats the fuck out of all the ninjas. And then, like, Braden pulls out a gun and just starts shooting ninjas. And,
yeah.
And then when all the ninjas are dead, they find his baby Kane, and he gets baby Kane. And his mom still survived. His mom survived somehow, right? His mom was still
alive. She must have just been in the house, I guess, because the ninjas never got indoors.
Taking a really long shit.
So Braden said, "Hey, Cho, I want you to come to America with me, and you can bring your son, start a new life, because I got these art galleries I'm opening up, and they're going to be very successful." When he's saying this the whole time, I'm like, how the fuck are you going to have success opening art galleries?
Yeah.
That's all front for something else. Don't trust this motherfucker. So there's no way you're getting any money out of art galleries.
But he came all the way to Japan just to recruit you for some reason for his art galleries. Like, this seems on the up and up.
So then the mom says, no, Cho, you cannot go to America with this man. I don't trust him. He, and Cho's like, no, he's my friend. He's my friend. Don't you worry. And then Braden's like, oh, Mama Cho, Mama Rhodes, why don't you come? Come to America, Mama Cho, and you can live with us too. And she goes, I don't know about this. So then that's where the opening cuts then, and then we get the opening credits and everything, right? And
then we get straight to another incredible scene.
Yes. But a couple questions here. Was it ever established why these ninjas hate his family so much?
I think I can put some logic on it backwards, knowing the rest of the plot of the movie, but it's never really explained.
Well, do you have a solution for why he was so hated?
I mean, if he's such this expert that Braden needs him to go to America, and he won't change his mind, because they're already talking about that before they walk up and find all the corpses of his dead family. I'm assuming Braden sent the ninjas to kill Cho's family so that he would then go to America.
Yeah. Okay. This makes sense now. All right.
But they never said anything like that.
Yeah. I just wasn't even thinking of that. All right. Yeah, that'll make sense. See, I didn't see him as like this. I didn't realize like he was some expert that Braden needed to bring to America. I just thought
they never said that. That's not a thing the movie ever said. That's something I just made up.
All right, well, it works, though, Tuffy. Good job. We'll give you a screenwriting credit for that.
Yeah, again, though, like, there's got to be any other way you can transport this heroin. Like, you can get some other guy who does cheap statues. Like, I'm sure you don't have to go through the work of killing a guy's family to get him to come.
I think killing the family is just a bonus.
But why do they need him anyway, though? Like, it's not like he's making the dolls.
No. Yeah. They don't need him at all.
Yeah. So, all right, there's some plot holes in Revenge of the Ninja, but just don't get caught up in it, all right?
It's mostly plot holes in terms of the plot.
Plot holes and awesome fight scenes, like the next one Tuffy's going to describe.
So now we jump ahead like 5 or 6 years, probably.
6 years. 6 years.
Okay. And now we're in the United States, and Kane is walking home from school with his grandma.
His grandma.
Yeah.
Mama Cho. And she's still wearing a kimono. She's still in a Japanese kimono. But he's now, acclimated to U.S. life. So he's got a Dodgers hat sitting on top of his head. Not necessarily on his
head. That's true.
It's just resting on that very top of his head.
They run into a pack of five ruffian kids, maybe a couple years older than Kane.
Yeah.
I was like, these must be the children of those ninjas back in Japan. They follow them. Trying to get revenge for their father.
Yeah. Yeah, like, why would they, would five kids pick on another little kid when he's walking with his Mama Cho? Like, why don't they just leave her, like, wouldn't they wait?
If he's walking alone, I think that would make more sense. But why would you beat up a kid who's with his grandma?
Yeah. Seemed a little especially aggressive.
He knows ninjutsu, apparently. You picked the wrong target. Maybe you go for the guy with, like, glasses and carrying a bunch of books and pocket protection.
Well, they saw the way he was wearing his hat, and they said, get a load of this guy.
It was also confusing, because they're on, it's not like a regular sidewalk. Like, they're on a wide path, maybe even the street itself, and Kane walks up to them, because they're kind of walking five wide. And he just says, could you move, please? Like, just go around them. They don't, there's grass, there's pavement.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can walk in the grass. Yeah. Ain't a problem.
The other kids just say, kick his ass. They're going to beat up this little kid.
Well, they got a surprise in store for them.
Yeah.
This little kid's a badass. This is a, do we have a category for best fight scene?
Best scene in general, but we don't have a best fight scene.
So I was going to say, they,
I mean, otherwise, this movie is just going to have all the nominees.
I know. There's at least two season locks for best fight scene.
Yeah. I mean, because Kane starts beating people up. There's a kid who tries to ride his bike at him, and Kane just kicks him off the bike. That was great. And then they end up off in, like, the woods, and Kane is not afraid to fight dirty when he's outnumbered. He just starts throwing dirt in people's eyes.
Yeah.
All right, I understand the first kid falling for it, you know, because it's a surprise.
Yeah.
But then the second kid runs up, and he whacks him in the face with more dirt. So what are you expecting, dude? You saw the dirt trick already.
I mean, is that much more unbelievable than anything that happened in WrestleMania last week?
How dare you? This fight goes on for a while, Tuffy. It goes on for a while.
There's another great sequence where one guy's holding Kane's arms back. Two other kids go to punch him, and he ducks. They both punch the first guy. Then they go to grab him, and he moves out of the way, and they run into each other like the Three Stooges.
Yeah. So it eventually ends, though, when Cho shows up. His dad just shows up.
And he says, you're not supposed to be fighting.
Yeah, he doesn't want his son being, following the path of the ninjutsu, because that leads to death, you know? So, but he does train him in the martial arts because, you know, it teaches discipline and it honors your family's heritage and traditions and stuff. But he has his sword, like, taped up so he can't draw it from the sheath. Like, it's, I'm not fighting anymore, you know?
Yeah. I mean, he still has other
taped closed
weapons on the wall, so it's not like he can't.
You can't break tape.
It's very strong tape. But Jank, when he gets little Kane back home, and he's telling him all this, and they're going to start to train. And who shows up then?
The blonde lady.
Yeah, Kathy.
Kathy.
Do you remember how she was dressed?
Yeah.
She was wearing a red kimono and no pants.
Well, I guess like a gi, kind of like a red gi. So because it only
full length gi. This seems like the shortcut.
Mini gi.
No pants. A lot of leg showing on now, Kathy.
Yep.
And that's how she shows up the train.
So she's got his best student.
Yeah, so Cho quickly tells the kid to hit the bricks. And he's like, I got to train Kathy. And Kathy's trying to put the moves on. I was like, oh, you're so strong. And she's like, let's just make the sweet, sweet love. And he's like, no, let's train. So they just start fighting each other, flipping each other around and stuff. And then, of course, he gets on top of her, you know.
Yeah.
But he resists. He can't, you know. He's mourning his dead wife, you know. He still can't be with
him. 6 years ago.
Yeah, what can you do? But
I guess his other sword is also still taped shut.
So Kathy is very distraught that he won't give her the time of day. But what else happens here? I think that's it. What's up next, man, Tubby?
I'm not sure. I just went out to smoke a dart, so I can't check in.
Well, I think...
Yeah, I think they're at the art gallery next because they got all the dolls coming in.
Yeah. Kane accidentally knocks over one of the dolls, the art gallery.
Yeah.
And it breaks and all the heroin spills on the floor, but he doesn't know what it is. You know, he just thinks it's...
just some powder inside of, or sand or something inside of the doll.
But Kathy is in charge of all this, and she knows what it is. And she tells him, they're like, hey, don't worry, but don't tell anybody about this, all right? So this Kathy is in with Brayden, Cho's buddy. He brought him to the United States. And Brayden is a crook.
Uh-oh. Yeah.
Okay. Smuggling heroin and these little Japanese dolls, and Kathy is in on it with them. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was a little, smuggling the heroin in to give to the Italian mafia.
Yeah, Carafino or something was the guy's name. Something like that.
Yeah. Kind of like a Kmart Polly Walnuts mixed with Kmart Joe Pesci.
Yes. Very yeah. much. Joe Pesci's career was clearly influenced by this man. Pesci studied yeah. this guy. He's very similar. And, yeah, so the Italian guys, they want to... But this Brayden and the Italian fellas, they get into a dispute over the cost of the heroin.
And this is also very convoluted because he has the heroin, so they're supposed to buy it, but they don't have the money that he has to give to the Japanese. But he says he's just going to have the Japanese sell the heroin instead?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. He didn't like what the Italians are trying to do here, strong arm them or whatever. So then Brayden just starts killing Italian people, right?
Yeah.
Now, when Brayden
stopped being able to follow the plot, and it was just a bunch of awesome fight scenes from here.
Yeah, because when Brayden goes out to start murdering these Italian fellas, he's a ninja, this Brayden. And he dresses in all-black ninja costume, but he has a silver face mask like Destro. And he puts that on. Yeah. And it's got, like, little green glowing eyes, too, I think. And so we don't know it's Brayden at first, right? We just see this ninja going around killing
people. I mean, we know it's Brayden because we see him put the mask in like his little briefcase that he carries around. Oh,
okay, that's right. Yeah. Right about that. So Brayden's going around killing everybody. And we do see some boobs here for the first and only time in the movie, or at least one boob.
Yeah.
There's an Italian fellow.
Yeah, but he kills the Italian guys. His muscle, and he kills his brother, and he kills his nephew, and it's his nephew who's a real ladies' man.
Yeah, his nephew's in the hot tub, like right out of a Sedaris movie. They're making this mystery love in a hot tub to a lady. You get to see her naked. And the Brayden kills him with a blow dart from hiding behind a screen, and then he collapses on the lady and forces her into the water, and then Brayden walks in and just kind of like pushes her under the water.
Yeah, like I will say in this, it's like. The dead guy's body is in the hot tub, but, like, human bodies are buoyant in water. She could have lifted him off of her in the hot tub.
Yeah. Well, that's why it's called acting.
Yeah.
She was acting.
But and apparently, no, like they mentioned... Yeah. Yeah, he just kind of drowns her with a long pole, and then they mention later on that it's going to take a jackhammer to get these bodies apart. So, I don't know what the heck happened. Yeah. Rigor mortis set in real quick, and I don't know.
Yeah, when the cop shows up, like when one of the cops shows up to investigate, they're bringing the bodies. The bodies are on the back of the ambulance on the gurney, covered in a sheet. And he goes, "Oh, you want to see him?" And he lifts, or you want to see her? I don't even think he says them. And he throws the sheet off, and you see like they're still hugging each other, like dead, naked, and they're welded together apparently by rigor mortis, and I don't know, chlorine in the hot tub. I don't know. But they're stuck together.
Yeah.
So now this cop is like, there's some weird murders going on here on this city. You know what I need to do? I need to go talk to the local cop ninja guy. there's a ninja guy who works at the cops. And he's just putting on a ninja demonstration in the hallway of an office building. What's going on? Or like in the lobby? Like... Like he's just training with guys. They're kicking each other in the face. It's like, all right. I don't know. This is weird. But this ninja guy who works with the cops is also buddies with Cho.
Yeah, he knows Cho, and he's trying to get Cho to come in because he says, I know these are ninjas. I need your expertise.
Yes. So we need you to come help us on these murders.
Because they killed I thought it was just like a bum, but maybe... No. There was the one guy he killed in the bathroom, and he fractured his leg and fractured his ribs.
Yes.
He said only a ninja could do that, kind of clean break on a kick.
And there was, like, a bum who was, like, an informant for the mob guy, right?
Or, he threw the star at that guy and hit him right in the eyeball.
Yeah, and then the blow dart. So they're like, oh, yeah, there's a ninja on the loose. And But Cho doesn't want to investigate things at first, right?
No, he doesn't want to be involved.
Yeah.
But then the Italians break into the art gallery,
I think.
Yeah, because the Italians are mad that Braden's trying
to... Yeah, they know that's where all the heroin is.
So they're like, you know what, we're just going to break into this art gallery, steal all the heroin. We'll just take all the dolls, and we'll sell it without paying them anything. So while they're busting into the art gallery, their Cho shows up and, like, stop. This scene is great.
And we should say one of the Italian henchmen is a stereotypical Native American.
Yes. But I think he's a white guy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's, yeah, I don't know what they called him in here. Did he have a name in here?
Chief.
What was it?
Chief.
Oh, all right.
Of course it is. But yeah, these villains are like double dragon enemies or something.
But yeah, he dresses like a Native American.
It is when they go meet the whole village people band later, but just the Native American person for now.
So, yeah. So let's see. The Native American fellow and, like, I think two other guys are trying to break into the thing, and then Cho chases them off. And there is a very long scene here of, because they're in a van. There's a big fight scene, and then it looks like the guys are getting away in the van. But then Cho chases them on foot through the city and grabs them. This whole scene was great, Cenk. This was awesome.
Yes, it was. Well, because also when the Italian mob boss is sending them out, he says, "Chief, if you get in trouble, you know what to do. Scalp them."
Okay.
So we're really buying into the stereotype. And then Chief later pulls out a couple tomahawk little hatchets. Because we're just falling in on this Native American stereotyping for this henchman.
But, like, it's, at one point, Cho jumps on the back of their van, and it's got, like, a ladder on the back door, and he's hanging on it, and it's dragging him through the city, and his jeans are getting burned off, you know, from the friction and everything.
And his legs would be completely shredded. Well, he's not doing any ninjing for the rest of this movie.
Yeah, he can't quite grab the van as they're running away, so he runs through, like, a little alley and does a little maneuver where he's running on a couple parked cars to get on top of the van.
Yeah. This is very much like Indiana Jones and Raiders of the Lost Ark when he goes under the car. Like Cho doesn't go under the car, but it's a similar kind of scene where he's on a car that's speeding through the city.
Well, first he goes into the car because he gets on the roof, and then he just launches straight through the windshield at these guys.
Yes, that was awesome. Yeah, Cenk doesn't seem impressed by this at all. What is going on, Cenk?
No, it was great.
Yeah, this scene was great.
Yeah, it's hard to say because the fights were just funny and, like, ridiculous, but it's hard to, like, pinpoint exactly how. It was more just, like, the faces and the acting, and I don't know.
Yeah, because the Cho's hanging on, like, back in the 80s, conversion vans all had those little decorative ladders on the back.
Yeah.
Because I don't think that ladder's really functional. Because, my parents had a van like that when we were kids.
Well, if you have to get up on the top. Ladder. If you're storing stuff on top of the van, you're taking a trip or something, you climb up.
Yeah, but that ladder was not for climbing on the van I had.
I don't know. But yeah,
Cho's hanging on the door, but yeah, the door hinge eventually gives out, and he just loses the van then, because the door falls off the van.
No, he is still on, even when the door, like, when the hinge breaks, he's still hanging on the door, but then another car comes in and sideswipes him.
Ooh.
And that's what knocks him off the van. But, like, this scene, the scene goes on for a good 3, 4, 5 minutes. I don't know, but it's awesome.
Long.
It is so good.
Yeah. And at the end of it, his pants are all ripped up from dragging on the street. His chest is all exposed. And some terrible prosthetics with cuts are placed underneath his clothes.
Because, like, when he first interrupts them and he chases them off the first time, they get in the van and leave. I'm like, oh, well, that was a good little fight scene, too. But no, Tuffy said, he's not done. He's running, chasing them through the city, jumping on cars, then jumps on him. And then it's like, oh, well, he's going to get knocked off here. So, all right, well, I guess it's done now. Nope, still going. The scene's still going. It was great. So, all right, but he finally gets knocked off the van. The bad guys get away. And,
yeah, I think the cops come back to him again and then and say, like, now will you be involved? And he still says no.
Huh. And
I think Kane is missing too at this point. Nobody knows where Kane is.
Is he missing at this point or is it after this? I can't remember.
He's missing because he's still missing when he gets captured. Like, Kane is just out wandering around Salt Lake City at this point.
Well, the reason why he's wandering around Salt Lake City is because
his grandma's busy.
Yeah, he saw his grandma get killed, right? That's why he.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Forgot about
yeah.
that.
Jank, tell us what happens here with grandma.
I believe, like, the ninja, the masked ninja who is Raiden.
Raiden.
Yeah. He comes in and he's ransacking the place. And he finds there's a guardian, you know, guarding the dojo there. The old lady.
And why was Raiden going in there to ransack the place exactly?
Maybe to go see if the dolls were still there, if he could get some heroin, maybe?
Yeah, it sounds likely.
I think they really give a reason.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm confused by it as well. I just watched this last night, too. I don't know. All right. But anyway, Jank, yeah, Brayden goes into the dojo, and Mama Rhodes, or Mama Cho, is waiting for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she does some crazy rolls. Like, she's jumping around like Yoda in the prequels, pretty much.
And you cannot tell where they edited from the stunt woman.
Not at all. You
could not tell.
Seamless. Then at one point she gets herself into like a corner, throws down like the littlest tiny smoke bomb that like makes like one little wisp, and all of a sudden she's gone. She's just vanished into the smoke. And he's like, "Where did she go? Where did she go?" And we see the kid. He's like, "Yeah, Kane." He's running around on the top. We see him starting to look down. He's like, "I don't know why he's on the
roof." Some reason there's a rope ladder hanging down in the middle of the dojo during all this.
Oh, because that's how Brayden got in.
That's how he came in.
Okay.
Yeah. Also, we should mention in their fight, Jank, Mama Cho used a bunch of different weapons, and including one time she like they always seem to be like stick related. Like she'd pop open a stick and there'd be a knife in it or something.
So
the one she throws at Brayden, he catches it, throws it back at her, stabs her right in the chest.
But she just did her own petard.
But she doesn't stop Mama Cho. She just keeps going.
Nope. Disappears into that smoke. And then we cut back to after we see that Kane is on the roof, we cut back. And all of a sudden, like, without showing how he figured this out, but somehow Brayden is, like, stabbed into the wall. And, turns out Mama Cho was right behind that wall.
Yeah, these are, like, paper Japanese balls. Yeah, I don't want to tell Mama Cho how to do her business. But maybe when you're disappearing, you don't stand flat against a paper wall.
Yeah, once you're behind that wall, then you go somewhere else. You start escaping.
She's clinging to it like Spider-Man. She's got a... She just gets stabbed through the belly, and she's dead. And so that's.
And then Brayden, for no reason, decides to just take his mask off and look at her. And, what do you know? Kane's up there looking, and he sees his face.
Yep. So now Brayden tries to chase down Kane, but Kane, he's a crafty little fella. He's got like a pocket knife and he cuts the rope ladder. So Brayden can't climb. Yeah. But it doesn't really slow Brayden down because he's like on that roof immediately. I don't know how he's going.
His legs are a lot longer than Kane's apparently.
Watching this right now, he comes up through like the ventilation ducts and opens a little door and Kane runs right into that door too, I'm seeing now. So Kane does
Chakma and Kane.
Same as Chakma.
They're not good with doors. How does Kane get away from Brayden? I don't even remember. I know he gets away and he's just roaming the city like tough to say.
Yeah, there's like a Coleman-esque foot chase for a little bit.
Yeah. I think he keeps going under like the heating ducts. Like, there's a little
he goes into small spaces that only a child could go in.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember there was a knife or a throwing star that went through it, like, just missed his head at one point.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little
bit. Yeah, this Cho, not afraid to put his son in danger.
So Kane is on the run, trying to get away from Brayden, and Cho... Oh, so then Cho comes back to the dojo.
Because there was the break-in into the art gallery, because the art gallery and dojo are one facility.
So Cho still doesn't want to help the cops until he sees his mom dead. And then?
Even then, I think he just decides, I'll do this my own ninja way. He's never really helping the cops.
Yeah.
But, because then we cut to a scene where Professor Tanaka's raping Kathy all of a sudden, or some other guy, I guess. I don't really know who that was.
Yeah, that was the Professor Tanaka guy. And, yeah, Kathy's, like, it seems to be in a relationship with Brayden, but it's not a... Well, Brayden's on the phone. Wait, see, there's one scene where Brayden and Kathy are on the couch, and she's, like, in lingerie, and he's, like, getting all rough with her on the couch. And
yeah.
She's like, no, no, no. And then the phone rings. He gets up, answers the phone. I think it's the Italians. This is earlier in the movie, I think. And then and he tells her to hit the bricks. So I don't know what the nature of their relationship is, but it doesn't seem to be a loving one. It seems.
No.
He also hypnotize her.
Yes, he does hypnotize her later.
Yeah.
Yeah, because she's busy getting raped by a guy. He takes the garrote wire and kills that guy, I think.
Yeah, that's Professor Tanaka. Sure.
I thought that guy was back later. Maybe that was a different guy.
Yeah, that was a different guy. Because the Professor Tanaka, he's wearing like, he's dressed like a sumo wrestler. He's just got like, little diapers on.
Okay.
And he starts getting real rough with Kathy, throws her down, and right when he's on top of her, Brayden comes in, and he takes his sweet time walking around the bed and then getting behind him,
yeah.
And then garroting them, and he kills him, and then he grabs Kathy, and he says, hey, what is he? Oh, he tells her to go get that kid. You got to find that kid, right?
Yeah, you got to get Kane.
And he hypnotizes her. He stares into her eyes,
yeah.
And he says, count with me, right? He's like, 1, 2, 3, or I don't know, and she's hypnotized. So she's going to go find Kane.
Yeah, we also do see her boobs in this scene. So that was
nice. Oh, we do? I didn't even know.
Yeah, when Professor Tanaka's taking her down to the bed.
Wow, I missed out on her boobs. All right, so, Jank, how does, well, what is the, should we just get right to the
next
scene?
Well, the next scene, before we get to that, is, I thought, the best scene in the movie, because the karate cop tells Cho, hey, I know some ex-cons who might know where to find your kid. They got eyes on the streets. So they go to the playground and go talk to the village people.
Because yeah.
There's like one guy dressed up as a cowboy, one guy wearing like knee pads and a visor and headphones. I don't even know how to describe the look of this gang of men.
One's like a biker guy.
Yeah.
And a construction worker and a cop and an Indian.
And as I pause it right now, like the cowboy guy is not just sitting. He is laying across a picnic table, like one leg up in a seductive looking pose, I would say.
Yeah, seductive pose.
And again, these guys, like, I think all Cho says is, do you know where my little boy is? And they just start fighting immediately.
Well, they say something to him. They crack wise to him. And then Cho just kicks the picnic table. He brings his foot up and, like, axe kicks it. And
smashes
it in half. And so then that pisses him off. So that it's go time, you know? So they start fighting. And this is another fight that goes on a long time.
They all do.
And that, like, I swear Cho beats up the same guy like three times each. Like we see him like knock him out like at least three times. But they go around and they beat up everybody. There are some good moments in this. Towards the end, Cho has a ninja star on his belt buckle.
Yeah.
And he takes it off his belt buckle and throws it and stabs the dude right in the hand because the guy had a gun. Boom, not anymore. He's got a ninja star in his hand. That's what he's got.
Yeah. There's one guy he's fighting. They're up on the playground, and Cho takes, like, a metal pole and sticks it into the playground part and then bends it over like that was hurting the guy. I don't really understand that. But the best part was the end of that fight is there's, you know, a slide, like a children's slide, that the guy ends up getting thrown down and – they act like when he lands on the ground coming out of the slide, like that was going to kill him. Or it's like, this is a children's playground with a slide. You just slide out. It's fine.
I don't know. It was pretty great.
Yeah, this pretty fight great. Was amazing.
Good place to have a fight, for sure. Very inventive.
All right, so this fight's great. The first fight in the movie with Kane and the little kids was great. But Jank,
the grandma's fight was pretty great.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Yeah, grandma's fight. But Jank, this next fight, you know the one I'm talking about, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That was about Kane versus scene. Kathy.
I mean,
the battle we've all been waiting for.
Early favorite for best scene, Golden Quesadilla.
Break it down for us, Jank.
Oh man, I don't remember all the beat by beats, but he's definitely jumping around like a little monkey the whole time. He's just basically throwing himself everywhere.
Yeah, he comes home and Kathy's like, you know, they're friends, him and Kathy, you know? And, yeah. And Kathy's like, oh, Kane, where have you been? I've been looking all over for you, you know? He doesn't know that she's hypnotized now, you know? And
well, he does seem to know that almost immediately.
But, yeah, how does the fight start? Like, do you know what triggers it, or?
Kane walks in, and she says, Kane, we've been looking all over for you. And he does not say a word, and she says, you're just like your dad. You can tell, too. You're coming with me, whether you like it or not, or something like that.
Oh, wow, okay. And
so it just escalates very quickly.
She is wearing pants in this scene, though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This was also the scene that clinched it for me, because I saw this, like, Tubi recommends, and I flipped through and got to this scene and thought, yeah, I'm picking this movie.
Yeah, so we have a grown adult woman having a karate fight with a six-year-old child. And it is so awesome. And the woman, at one point, she gets, like, a big pole, and she's chasing him with a pole, and she's smacking him in the ass with the pole, knocking him around and stuff. And,
yeah.
And he's got a weapon, too. What weapon is he? He gets something.
He grabs, like, there's another pole that's, like, stuck on the side of the stairwell that goes down to the dojo.
Yeah, big, heavy pole.
But before they get to the poles, like, he, you know, she tries to grab him, and he ducks under her grab, and then he's crawling away, and he just crawls into the door.
Yeah. The door is shut. I don't know why, but he just crawls head first into it and hits his head, and then he's like, ah! And he's screaming.
I guess that's the comedy portion of this movie.
So, again, this fight goes on for a good bit, too. And Kane gets the upper hand on Kathy, and he knocks her down against the wall there, and she's sitting down against the wall, and he's got, like, a weapon with, like, a blade on it, I think, like a pole.
Yeah, he's got one of the sticks that pulls apart to reveal a blade.
And he could kill her, but he's a six-year-old child, so he doesn't want to kill someone. So he just, you know, looks down, he just turns around and starts walking away. Kathy hops up, runs over, just grabs him, puts her under her arm like a sack of groceries, and that's the end of the fight. That's the end of the fight.
She bags him up like you bagging groceries.
Nicely packed, bad boy. But it's like, oh, that was so amazing. She just scoops him up and fight over.
Yep. That's how all good fights should end. John Wick should do that all the time.
It's tuck him under your arm, fight's over. Kane gives up immediately. He's like, all right, you got me. He just had a 25-minute brawl, and then but she just puts him under her arm, boom, it's over. So she takes him back to Brayden. And now Brayden, instead of just killing the little kid right away, he's like a James Bond villain. He comes up with these elaborate ways to kill people, I guess. I don't know. But he just locks him in a sauna. And he's just going to, like, I don't know, slowly cleanse the toxins from his body. I don't know what his idea was.
Yeah, because now Brayden has called Kaifano and told Kaifano, hey, I'm coming to kill you. And then while he's getting ready to go fight the Italians, Kathy calls Cho and says, Brayden has Kane.
Yeah.
Brayden heard that phone call, so now Kathy's in trouble too.
So the hypnotizing.
Yeah. So yeah, like you say, he's like a James Bond villain. So he's not just going to kill Kathy and Kane. He's going to put Kane in a sauna and I guess sweat him to death. And he's going to tie Kathy up, arms and legs, in a hot tub, and then turn the jets on, I guess, to drown her? What's the idea?
They're pointing right at her face, like they were all aiming and, like, amped up super jets, like, basically full-on fire hose action, spraying her in the face.
and she's in, like, a white tank top and underpants at this point as well.
Yeah.
Although when she gets out, though, the tank top completely dry. So we don't see a tank top. But so Kane has to save them, right?
And now Cho has decided it's time to untake his sword. So he's getting all his ninja stuff out, too.
Yeah, because he's got to rescue his son and revenge his dead mom. And so he's like, all right, I'm going. But let's just stick with the Kane and Kathy here for a second.
Yeah.
So Kane, he's like, his hands are tied together in the sauna, but But he holds them over the coals in the sauna.
Well,
like
this was also confusing. Like, his hands are tied together and his feet are tied together, but his hands are not tied to his feet. So he could just get up and, like, hop around, or he could use his tied-up hands to untie his feet.
But he's still... Yeah, but he uses the coals to burn through the ties on his hands.
Yeah.
And then he stands up and he yells out through the door. He's like, hey! And then the guy guarding him goes, what? And he opens up the sauna, and biggest mistake that guy ever made. Because you just unleashed Kane. And Kane beats the fuck out of this guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kane got a pair of nunchucks from somewhere. He's using those.
And his prison wallet.
And he's going around freeing Kathy, like, because she's tied, you know? So, like, he'll cut one rope and then beat the guy up, cut another rope, beat the guy up some more. And it goes on for a while. And, like, why was he so eager to free Kathy, though? Because the last time he saw her, she was beating him up and kidnapping him and taking him to Brayden, you know?
Well, I guess Brayden turned on her, so maybe that means, you know, the enemy of your enemy is your friend.
I would have liked some scene where Kathy says, oh, I'm sorry, Kane, I was hypnotized. But we never
did that. So, anyway. I mean, I guess when you see her tied up, you go, oh, I guess she must not be as bad as I thought.
Yeah.
But she still beat you up and kidnapped you. So,
scooped you up in her arms.
Yeah.
So anyway. So Kane does beat up the guy and he frees Kathy, and they call the cops, or what do they do?
I don't know, because they try to call the karate cop, but he's busy following Cho into the building to fight Brayden, so I don't know if they ever actually talked to anybody, but...
Yeah, and so this final fight scene, it's staged in, like, these two skyscrapers right across from each other, and Cho begins the scene way up high in one of these skyscrapers, and he comes out
Brayden,
of...
I thought. Wasn't that Brayden?
Okay.
Cho climbs. Brayden's the one who does
The zip line.
Bow and arrow, and then does the...
Okay. Thank God. That makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
Because, Brayden zip lines across into the... All right, and he gets in, and he starts fighting all the Italian guys and everything. And then...
Not really fighting, just, like, stabbing and killing. They don't put up much fight.
Yeah, my favorite one is he's, like, in the ventilation ducts in the ceiling, and there's two guys standing in the hallway just chatting it up, and he popped down, like, hanging down like a bat, his head hanging down, and he's spinning these little spikes in his hands, like, doing little tricks with them. And the two guys are just looking at him like, oh, what is going on here? And they're just watching him do these little tricks. And then, boom, he stabs them both in the eye. Bang.
Yeah. Oh, man.
So, he's going through murdering everybody. Cho is down at the bottom of this skyscraper, and he puts on these gloves of spikes on him. And he does the Spider-Man imitations right up the wall.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Now, it did get confusing because, like, Brayden and Cho aren't fighting each other. They're both independently moving up through this building and killing people. And they killed a lot of people.
They do kill a lot of people. And that Carafino fella, whatever the fuck his name is, he's got an M16. And he's just sitting in his office just waiting for him. Or Brayden, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't even remember how he died. I guess Brayden killed him.
Yeah, I don't remember either. Because I know the police officer catches up with Brayden at some point, and he gets killed.
He eats a lot of ninja stars. Although I think he's still alive, because Cho talks to him later, so he may have survived. I don't know.
I thought, Cho catches up to him and talks, and then he dies in Cho's hands, I thought.
I thought he was just sleepy, taking a nap.
Yeah, Carfano, that's he was shooting his gun. Tendency.
But Cho does some awesome shit in this. He's got, like, there's one scene where he throws, like, a bunch of little spike jacks on the floor. And
cat traps.
This is right when he gets to the building.
And there's a dude running down the hallway at him. And he's like, hey, what are you doing? And then Den Cho, like, throws these little metal balls over his shoulder.
Yeah, like marbles, basically. Yeah.
And the guy slips on the marbles and goes face first onto the spider.
Yeah. Like Mankind in the Hell in a Cell.
So, and then later, Cho, he's grabbing a guy, like, the stairwell, and a guy opens the door, and he has a gun on Cho, and he pulls down Cho's mask, and Cho spits, like, off his green mist, but metal spikes. Right into the guy's face.
Yeah, they did show those earlier, and I was like, what are those? And then, oh, it did come back.
Man, don't show Oscar this, or she might get some ideas. But man, metal spikes. Right in his face. There were some awesome scenes in this movie.
Yeah. I mean, the fight scenes were all pretty excellent. Like, they were goofy as fuck, and I loved it.
Cenk, do you remember how the Italian guy dies?
I'm watching now. He's shooting his M16 at Braden, and Braden just throws one of his little pointy sticks through his hand, and that's all they really show. It's just him getting a knife through the hand.
There's got to be more to it than that, no?
And that's kind of when Cho catches up to him, too.
Oh, all right. Yeah, so now the rest of the movie, it's just Cho versus Braden in this very long fight.
Yeah, this was the only one that really felt like it was dragging on.
Yeah, I mean, they did some good stuff. They take it all over the place. They're on the roof of the building, and they're doing all kind of flips and kicks. And
yeah. He does this disappearing smoke trick, and then, like, turns out he's, like, right in front of Cho and just pops right up and pops him, like, right off the roof. It was, like, an uppercut, knocks him over their side.
Oh, yeah, and thankfully Cho, like, does a Batman kind of thing where he has a grappling hook or something and catches on and so he doesn't die. But there were a couple things in here where the Braden starts pulling some tricks, and he's got, like, a fake robot arm jumping out of the pool.
Yeah.
What the hell is that about?
Yeah, they go up, and there's a hot tub on the roof, which doesn't make any sense, because this is like an industrial skyscraper roof. You wouldn't have a hot tub up here. And you see Cho kind of tiptoeing around it, and it's like, well, obviously he's in the hot tub, and a hand reaches up and grabs it, and Cho chops it off, but that's a fake hand. Like, then you're thinking, well, then where's Braden at?
How did that even happen? How is that possible? That a fake hand
Braden was also hiding in the hot tub.
But again, how did he do that? Fake hand.
He's a ninja, Mike Dell.
I guess. I don't know. A couple of times, like, Cho gets his thighs sliced with a sword at some point.
Yes. Those thighs are already sliced open.
His thighs took a beating. Yeah, it's a pretty long fight. It goes on for a while. Tuffy, how does it end?
Braden kind of reaches over, like, Cho's shoulder with a blade to try and stab him, and Cho slowly redirects it into Braden's gut, and the blood just flies out of the sky.
Yes. It's shooting out like a spigot. Just phew, blood going out, and Braden falls down. And right, well, before he falls down, Cho also slices the mask off his face.
Yeah.
Pops it off. And then, Braden's dead, gushing blood out of his belly. And then Kane runs up on the roof. Daddy, daddy, daddy. And is that Kane? Yep. And he holds Kane. And then Kathy runs up. She's still in a bathrobe. And she runs up and she looks at Cho. Cho smiles at Kathy. And that's the end.
That's it.
Now they're all going to have.
You don't say it.
But, finally forget about his wife who died like 6 years ago.
Yeah. Hey, it's time to mourn. Yeah. So there it is, Revenge of the Ninja. It's on Tubi. I watched it on something else. I think on Comcast it's on whatever they let you watch for free, Xfinity. Because I just did the old voice thing and I said Revenge of the Ninja. Pop. What do they call that on Comcast when it's like Screevy? Not Freevee.
Xfinity on demand, maybe?
I don't know what it is, but it came up and I watched it for free. So, and there weren't any commercials or anything, I don't think either. So.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty helpful.
yeah.
But, Cenk, anything we missed, or what do you think of Revenge of the Ninja?
It was pretty great. Yeah, it's one of those movies that's just, it's fun. High on the fun scale.
Yeah, don't overthink the plot here. Don't get caught up in it.
Yeah.
Just
a lot of cool ninja weapons.
And Kane is a badass. That little kid is awesome. Yeah.
Just the sword tricks he was doing, I was like, dang, that kid could cut himself so easy.
I guess he grew up to be an actor. He's been in a bunch of stuff over the years. Like, a lot of stuff over in, like, Japan and stuff, so I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
Who went in a fight, him or Short Round?
See, that's what I was thinking. Like, Short Round is clearly inspired by this kid, right?
Yeah.
So, I think this kid takes Short Round easy, actually. It's not even close.
Seems like he's got a lot more training, yeah.
Now, this kid versus Gary Coleman, it depends what variation of Gary Coleman. Kid from left field, Gary Coleman. Kid with broken halo, Gary Coleman.
I mean, broken halo, Gary Coleman's the only one who has a shot because he has angelic powers, I guess.
No.
Other than that, every Gary Coleman, no chance. No. Overruled.
On the right track, Gary Coleman. He'll pop out of the footlocker and boom, crack him one.
Kane was on a Japanese TV show called Sportsman Number One Decisive Battle, and he dominated that show.
Sportsman Number
he
One.
He won it six times.
Whoa.
That's when they translate those titles.
Well, he only won it because Gary Coleman wasn't around anymore, so he's able to win.
Six wins and 4 second places.
Holy hell.
Might be your new Taskmaster, Tuffy.
Yeah. That's what I'm thinking. It sounds like Ninja Warrior meets Taskmaster.
I'm into season 16 of Taskmaster, Tuffy. And this is probably the first season where I don't really care for anybody on the show.
No. Yeah. Well,
it makes it tough.
Eventually, like, yeah.
I just probably won't even watch
it. I mean, eventually they're going to run out of people, aren't they?
Yeah. There's just no one to root for, so it's like, all right, I don't really care about this. But
yeah.
I might just jump right to 17, the new one, see what's going on. Here. All right, so what do you give this 1 out of 10 there, Jack?
Ooh, you know what? I'll give it a solid 9. It's pretty high up there.
I'm right there with you. On a bad movie scale, this is everything you want.
Yeah.
This is great. There's so many awesome scenes in this movie. That, nothing to hate on this. Tuffy?
Also a 9. It's not quite Sidaris, but it's not far from it.
Yeah.
It's better than the most recent Sidaris's that we did, for sure.
Yeah, I could have used more busty playmates running around, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they took it a little easy on the nudity, for sure.
So, all right, there it is. Revenge of the Ninja, highly recommended. Everyone should go check it out immediately. Next week, is it whose turn?
You're up, Michael.
Yeah, I was thinking it was Jank, but no, even though Alpha was last week, it seemed like a my pick. That was a Jank pick.
Yeah.
And I finally did hear from Miles Watson about Alpha.
Oh, what was his take?
I don't have the email in front of me, but he wasn't happy about it. he wasn't happy. Anyway, maybe I'll check Miles. Maybe if he want to be here next week, we'll watch something he wants to check out, but I'll let you guys know at some point.
Sounds good.
So, Jank, I hear tell you were watching things this week.
Sure. Yeah, definitely watched a couple of things. So first off, last week, the last episode of season 2 of Invincible finally aired. They did like the 4 episodes back in the fall, and then like they took a big break, and then they did 4 more here. So it was a big little hiatus there.
For those who don't remember, Invincible animated cartoon on Amazon Prime about a kid who basically realizes he's a superhero. His dad's basically Superman, but he realizes, oh, my dad's a real jerk.
Yeah. Dad's not quite the guy he thought he was. Yeah. The whole Viltrumite race, not exactly what he originally envisioned.
Yeah, in season 1, Superman murders all the Justice League, basically.
Yeah. It's pretty great. They have to get a bunch of scrubs. Basically, like, the Teen Titans essentially have to kind of step up.
Call them up like, from the minors. Yeah. Yep. Gotta bring them up.
So it's really good. Season 2, I've heard people are not as thrilled on season 2, but it's still solid to me. Like it follows the comics pretty well. So it's kind of, it's a period where they got to start building more storylines. So it's not, it doesn't have quite the, you know, emotional punch that the first season finale had with him fighting his dad and all that stuff. So it was never going to reach that height this season, but it's setting up a lot of things that'll be paying off very soon. So, he finally broke up with Amber, which was good. Finally, that they dragged that out way too long.
Yeah. If I recall, there's a cute redhead, right? Who was a hero as well?
Adam Eve. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Yep.
So that's where he's going to go, right, Adam?
Starting to pave the way for that, yeah. Like, there was a thing in the final episode of the season where he's fighting this Angstrom Levi, who has the power to, like, send you to different universes, like multiverse-type things. So he was stuck in one of these universes, and, like, the Justice League, essentially, from the future, like, their future selves had to, like, eventually get him out and send him back to his right time to get him home. And so there was like a very, like a lot older Adam Eve. And she kind of told him like, hey, like Eve's into you. So when you get back home, like tell her either you like her or you don't, or just let her move on with her life. Just tell her something. So yeah, I think now he kind of knows, oh, like I should probably do something about this.
Well, that's good. That's good. Yeah. So overall, what do you think? Season two.
It was good. They kind of, I guess, I didn't even know that this existed, but apparently during that fight, there was a Marvel comic that was like a Marvel team up type thing that had Spider-Man and an Invincible meeting. So people were wondering if they were going to do that in this fight here, but they kind of did it as best they could, but they couldn't get the rights technically. So it was like, you know, the Iraq Knight or something, fighting Prof Ock or something like that. But I think they got the same guy who did the voice for Spider-Man in one of the cartoons. So like they tried to, you know, do it as close as they could without getting sued, essentially. So that was kind of fun. Yeah. There was a part that was, it was very meta, but it was kind of funny where, they're going to a Comic-Con and, he's talking to the guy who created Seance Dog, which is like his favorite comic book. And he's like, when's the next season of the animated series coming out? And the guy's explaining to him like how long it takes to animate things. And like, you ever notice like on cartoon shows where like sometimes they just show the same panel and they make it look like things are moving, but they're not really moving just to save time. And they're like doing that while they're explaining it. And he's like, wow, that's a good point. I'm going to go back and watch season two a lot more closely. Like, oh, that's pretty funny. But I think they did do seasons two and three, like, concurrently, essentially. So I think it'll be a lot less of a gap. This was, I think, like 2 years or so since season one to season two. So hopefully it'll not take as long to come back.
Well, that's good. What else did you watch?
So X-Men 97, still watching that.
I watched the first four episodes last week.
Ooh. Nice. Catching up. Yeah, this was a big one this week, Tuffy. The Motendo one last week, not so much, but.
Yeah.
That one, the only thing was they kind of paid a lot of homage to the 90s arcade game, like the X-Men arcade game. So that was, I guess, something, but.
Now that I'm thinking it through, it's like, yeah, the first three episodes, a lot of stuff going on. And then that one, they're just in a video game.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty lame. Just Jubilee trying to learn how to grow up, I guess. It's like, okay, this isn't the best story. But then at the end, it's life, death. Yeah, a little bit.
Oh, okay. I remember you telling me that. But was that supposed to be like an arcade situation? Like arcade the villain? Like
no, it was Mojo, essentially. Instead of doing TV, now he's expanding into video games. So.
Oh, so that's the Mo and Motendo.
Yep.
Mojo. All right, gotcha.
Yeah. So then they kind of crammed, you know, part one of Life Death into the very end of the episode. It's maybe like 8 minutes of the show or something like that. So it was interesting a little bit. They did mention that Forge had kind of created the technology that would eventually create the gun that shot Storm. So it wasn't quite as direct, but it was like, oh, yeah, I kind of came up with these ideas and then someone in Scotland did it. But They introduced Adversary Mike Dell, which is pretty cool. Never seen him in any of these like adaptations.
I don't think I've ever seen him at all. I don't know who that is.
Oh, he was like, remember from the Fall of the Mutants? Like, he was the guy they were fighting in Dallas when they all got killed. And...
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember what he looks like or anything. But,
yeah, he's like a Native American spirit. In the show, they kind of portray him as like a giant bird.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know if they're going to go Fall of the Mutants or he's just going to be a villain for the life-death portion of this where Storm's trying to get her powers back or whatnot. But we'll see how that goes.
Hey, by the way, I just this moment saw Tuffy's the moon is mooning the sun shirt. Yeah. Total eclipse. That's pretty great, Tuffy. Pretty great.
Yeah.
Now, Jank and I wish we were there.
Yep,
I know.
So,
yeah, this week's episode. This was a big one. There's been a lot of hubbub online about this one. It was a mixed bag for sure. They threw a lot at the wall this week. They're kind of combining a lot of eras and some of it worked, some of it maybe not as much. But, the main focus of the episode was Genosha is kind of, you know, now a mutant state, and they're entering the UN. So the kind of inner council, which is essentially the inner council of the Hellfire Club, is kind of calling Magneto down there. They want to, you know, make him the leader of Genosha essentially. Even though he's also leading the X-Men. And so him and Rogue and Gambit go down there. And they've kind of been teasing this whole, you know, Rogue, Gambit, Magneto love triangle a little bit this season. Although they haven't really laid much of the groundwork. So it's just kind of, it's like if you read the comics, you kind of expect it. But, like, they haven't done much on the show to build that up. So it's kind of like, okay. But then they do some big reveals, which did not really work for me at all. Because they tried to build in, they dropped some hints earlier this season about like Rogue and Magneto having some kind of a past. And I was like, oh, maybe that happened in like the year that we missed, you know, the year between when the old series ended and this one picked up. But no, they went way back and they're like, oh yeah, like when I was a kid and Mystique was raising me, like she sent me to Magneto. And, like, we realized that he could touch me, so, like, we started hooking up. I'm like, oh, no. Last man and this teenage girl.
I realized he could touch me, so we started hooking up.
Yep. Like, his magnetic field, you know, his, like, shield or whatever, would kind of keep him from technically touching her, so it was safe for him to touch her without her powers activating. And it's like, oh, boy, that's awkward. And then they're also like, oh, yeah, even though we acted like we never knew each other on the show, like, you saw our first interactions and neither of us, you know, referenced each other. They're like, oh, we just kind of pretended it didn't happen. I'm like, what? That's bullshit. That's complete and utter bullshit. You're just pulling stuff out of your ass. So, yeah, all of that didn't quite work. But it comes to, like, a big head and, like, Gambit's kind of, you know, trying to make a play for her. And she's like, you know, like, I can't touch you. So I think I'm going to stay here with Magneto and, like, be his queen. He's just kind of, like,
do stuff to me.
Yeah, basically. He got me.
Gambit's like, well, I could wear, like, a scuba outfit and go to town. Yeah,
full body condom. Yeah,
ain't no problem.
Yeah, and so they also kind of set up.
Hey, wait. Let me ask you this though, Jen, because you mentioned like they didn't they do stuff with Rogue and Magneto in the comic books too? Like at some point,
yeah.
Like, but that was like way later. Like, though, right?
The late Claremont era, there's a time in, like, the Savage Land where, like, Rogue was down there and Magneto, and, like, she had lost her powers for whatever reason.
She had lost her powers.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, if you lost your powers, you can go be with anyone. You don't have to be with the old guy.
Yeah. But then in, like, the Age of Apocalypse, they were married because over in that reality, she had kind of had a similar incident like she did with Carol Danvers in our reality, where she had held on to Polaris for too long. So she got her magnetic powers permanently. So like their two magnetic fields would like cancel each other out.
There's a lot of questions about that I'd have to ask.
Yeah.
But, exactly.
But somebody saw a child, so apparently he can pass through that.
Did they ever approach the, or address the 40-year age difference between the two of them, or no? Just
Nope, just kind of rolled with it. Because like, the 90s...
When Rogue came into the comic book, she was like 18, right? 17, 18? Yeah. Wasn't she was a teenager?
Yeah, she was pretty young.
She initially started? And at that point,
not much.
Yeah, and at that point, Magneto was already gray, and, you know, at least late 40s. Like, at least my age, right?
Yeah, 40s, 50s. Yeah.
So, all right.
Weird. Yeah, like, then in the 90s, like, when Magneto got his brain wiped by Professor X, and then, like, he, his, you know, Avalon floating space station fell to Earth, and all of a sudden there was this younger guy who looked like Magneto, but was now noticeably younger. Was
like Vince McMahon when he dyed his hair black and he started wearing a mustache.
Exactly. He still had the white hair though. It was like, but kept mentioning, oh, he looks younger. So he was amnesiac and he joined the team calling himself Joseph. And so then Joseph and Rogue started having a little bit of a thing. And he like came up with some way where he could like use nanotechnology and like pull it together with his magnetic powers and that could block him from touching or, you know, make it so he could touch her. So, yeah.
How about a glove? Just put a glove on. I don't know if you need nanotechnology. This glove will work.
Can't kiss through a glove, Mike, though.
So, anyway. Yeah, so, all right.
I kind of set that up. Also, in this episode, there was a whole thing where, like, Cyclops is losing his shit after his son got taken to the future. So, like, they were doing a big, like, Trish Tilby came by to do a big, you know, news story on the X-Men and, you know, how they're trying to change things for mutants. And she was kind of talking
Wait, let me stop you there. You said Trish Tilby?
Yeah.
Is that
remember
from Jessica
her?
Jones, Trish?
No, different. That's
how. Oh, yeah, that's.
Patsy Walker. The Hellcat, yeah. Yeah.
Who is
Trish Tilby, she was like a reporter character that dated Beast for a while.
Oh, that sounds somewhat familiar.
Yeah. It was kind of in, like, the X-Factor days and then, like, the early kind of 90s okay. X-Men times. But, yeah, she's talking to Cyclops, and he kind of starts losing his shit when she mentions the kid. And he starts getting all angry and, like, you stupid humans. Like, he's kind of going down a bad path. Like, you guys won't leave us alone. And meanwhile, like, Jean Grey is kind of like, she doesn't know where she fits in now because she doesn't know. She knows that she's the real Jean Grey, but she doesn't know when they got switched. So she's like, I don't know which memories are mine and which are hers at this point. So she's kind of like starting to wonder about Cyclops and kind of starting to lean towards Wolverine a little bit. Like, Wolverine might be finally getting his chance. And then she catches Cyclops on the old astral plane talking to Madeline Pryor.
Uh-oh.
Busted. He's like, we have a kid together, like, it's not that weird.
I thought it was banging you, I swear.
Yep.
I'll be honest, there are times in my life where I can't tell my memories from those of Gary Coleman. I don't know which one.
I think I was just paddling away.
I was adopted by a rich white man. I take it in. So anyway.
So yeah, then the episode comes to a big conclusion, which, this is where it got interesting. Cause Rogue, you know, has kind of chosen Magneto, but then she's like, they have like this big dance and they're like, and she's like, eh, you know what? I think I kind of like Gambit. I'm going to go with him. And, but just then this giant Tri-Sentinel comes a calling.
Oh, the Tri-Sentinel.
Yeah. So it's kind of doing the whole like beginning of the Grant Morrison era, but it's also trying to do the Morlock Massacre at the same time a little bit because it's just wrecking people. It's just murdering mutants in Genosha like crazy, including a bunch of the Morlocks. So it's just wrecking shop. And, so Gambit.
Wait. Yeah, they're jumbling everything up. So the Morlocks are in Genosha?
Yeah, most of them seem to have gone to Genosha at this point, yeah.
Have they already been murdered down in the tunnel?
Nope.
Well, then why the fuck do they go to Genosha?
Because it's like where mutants, it's like a country now where mutants can live free and mutants are
in
charge.
Yeah, I understand what Genosha is, but,
yeah.
I don't
makes sense. You could live above ground in a nice country rather than under, you know, in the sewers.
Yeah, but I think the Morlock tunnels, that's such a big deal. Like the murder, the mutant massacre, the Morlocks down the tunnels. That's such an iconic storyline. I don't think you can just fuck it up like this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a weird choice for sure. They're kind of combining some stuff, but. So yeah, they're just getting, mutants are getting killed left and right. Nightcrawler happened to be there. He looks like he almost died, but it looks like he's going to live. So that's good. And then so Rogue, Gambit, and Magneto are fighting this thing. And, Magneto's he kind of encases Gambit and Rogue in this metal shell to protect them. And then he seemingly.
So he can touch them? Is that why he puts it in? No. So he can touch them.
No, he's kind of protecting him. He's trying to do the right thing there, give them a chance to live. So he tries to take this thing out, doesn't succeed, but he saves a bunch of people and then basically seemingly blows up. But we don't see a body, so I'm assuming there's no way he's dead. But they make it seem like, oh, yeah, he's dead. So then Gambit he ends up jumping on top of this thing, trying to take out this giant sentinel. And it stabs him through the chest. And he uses that to start channeling his energy through it and charges the whole thing up, blowing it to shit. And Gambit's now dead. They killed off Gambit.
What?
Yeah. Yep. So they killed off both of Rogue's love interests, seemingly. But you do see Gambit being dead and Rogue's holding him. She's like, I can't feel you anymore, Remy. And so it seems like he's dead, but I'm guessing he's not really dead because there was a scene
he's not dead.
Yeah, they're not killing off Gambit in here. I don't see that happening. So there was a scene with Cable, a brief scene with Cable. So where you see Cable, there's got to be Apocalypse usually on this show. So I'm assuming he's going to make Gambit the new Horseman of Death. That would be my guess because that did happen eventually in the comics.
Really?
Yeah.
So Gambit now looks like blue and everything, or Archangel?
He had a weird ashen. He kind of turned gray and gray and black and stuff like that. And then it was so dumb because immediately after he he freed him within two issues probably. And then he was oh, I can switch back and forth between that form and my normal form. It's
Lois Lane getting in the plasma to turn black. We just read that.
There's barely any lasting effects. They're just oh yeah, I could be either one. Cool.
That's dumb.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. So, Tuffy, how are you feeling about the X-Men 97?
Yeah, it's fine. I don't have all the history to know where they're fucking around with things. So it's whatever. Whatever happens is a new story to me.
Because it sounds terrible.
Yeah. I mean, it's not, it's, they're throwing a lot out there really quick. The team is kind of a mess right now. Storm's obviously not there. People are dying left and right. Nobody seems to be getting along. It's a strange way to start the show.
But. Have you seen that scene yet where Gambit is on Wolverine's back and making his claws glow?
No, luckily that has not happened. I think may have been the promo image for the, for the teaser.
We'll say they got some weird clothing choices for Gambit.
Yeah. Although I think those are comic accurate. Yep, it was definitely during the Jim Lee era. I do remember him wearing that, playing basketball and shit.
He's wearing shorts like Hulk Hogan and
he's wearing shirts that are cut off at the nipples, basically.
Yeah, the one Carl Weathers was wearing in Rocky III when they're running on the beach.
Pretty Deadly, Tuffy. They wear their shirts that are
Yeah. Yes, very much like Pretty Deadly.
Well, then I like it then. Pretty Deadly's awesome. So, all right.
Yeah.
So that's X-Men 97.
Yep. X-Men 97. Been a ride. Tuffy, you watched Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yes, I did.
Yeah. that was something.
And this was the finale?
Yeah.
Yeah. The
series finale, yeah.
Did they have a trial, like you were guessing?
Yes, it is.
Yep. Played out mostly the way you would expect. And then they just kind of twisted it a little bit at the end, thankfully. So it did not go down exactly the same way as the Seinfeld finale.
So they just called up a bunch of people from previous episodes to testify against Larry?
Yep. Yes. Like Mocha Joe comes in because Larry opened the Spite store and then burned both stores down on accident. And the lady who he was on the sea lift with, who was like an Orthodox Jew, so she couldn't be with Larry after sunset, and she had to jump off the ski lift, was there.
I remember that, yeah.
At one point, Larry could see the trial was going badly, so to garner sympathy, he had Susie put on a blonde wig and come in a wheelchair and say that she was hit by a bus and he rescued her and now they're in love.
Why would Susie agree to do this?
To help Larry, but that fell apart because...
but she hates Larry.
Well, it was also Susie and Jeff's anniversary, and they went to Auntie Ray's restaurant, and she loved the salad dressing, but Auntie Ray wouldn't give her the recipe.
Oh, okay.
So Jeff and Larry pulled some shenanigans and lied on the phone to Auntie Ray about, you know, Jeff's wife was having an allergic reaction and he needed to know what was in the salad dressing. So that's how he gets the recipe. And while he's on the phone with her, he says it's a real catawampus. And then as Auntie Ray is walking in to testify, Jeff is just chatting in the gallery and says the word catawampus. So Auntie Ray catches on to what happened. And testifies not for Larry's benefit, but to his detriment. And then Susie finds out that that's how they got the recipe. And then she starts yelling at him and takes off the wig and says, "You fucking idiots, you fucking lied to get that recipe."
That was hilarious.
And then they set up
that, like the little girl that he like saw in the bathroom one time.
Yeah.
And he hugged her and like he had a bottle of water in his pants.
Yeah.
She's been scarred for life by it.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, because then obviously Larry gets found guilty, just like in Seinfeld, and he gets put into prison, and then he's sitting there, and just like in Seinfeld, he's doing, sits down and he's got the pants tent, like the first episode of the series. So they're doing the same parallel again, where the series with him in jail talking about the topic of the first episode, but then Jerry stops by, and Larry gets out because the jury was supposed to be sequestered, and they had all this, you know, talk about how hard it has to be sequestered and this, that, and the other. Because Jerry stops at the hotel bar one night and sees a guy who looks like Joe Pesci and says, "Hey, you look just like Joe Pesci." And the guy doesn't appreciate it, but then it turns out that guy's on the jury. So since he broke the sequester, Larry gets off.
Yeah, mistrial.
And then Jerry and Larry are walking out of jail, and they go, "Oh, this is how we should have had ended the finale."
Eh. Oh. It doesn't sound that much better.
It was good. I enjoyed it.
Alright.
It's slightly better, for sure. I think that would have helped to have you go through the process.
I think it's better because also Larry doubling down on that the finale was not bad. It was a good idea, and people were just stupid for not liking it.
I suppose it's one way of looking at it. But
at least he realizes they were close, but maybe a little tweak would have fixed it.
Yeah,
possibly. All right. So, how many seasons all told for Curb?
Oh, also of interest to you, Mike Dell. Ted Danson and Cheryl come to support Larry, but Larry's suspicious that Ted Danson is just there for his own publicity to do the protesting. That plays out pretty funny because then Ted gets arrested and then the series ends with Larry, Lewis, Richard, or Larry, Richard, Lewis, Jeff and Susie, Cheryl and Ted, and Leon all on the plane kind of sitting across the row. And it's like Ted Danson and Cheryl looking at the photos of him getting arrested going like, "Oh yeah, look how tight those cuffs look on my wrists."
So, yeah, it was pretty good. I enjoyed it.
All right.
12 seasons, I think.
Yeah, 12 seasons. 12. I probably only saw the first 8, maybe. I think maybe.
Yeah. I feel like it was 6, 7, or 8. One of those could have potentially been the last season because Larry, like, dies at the end of one of those seasons, I think.
Does he really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that
he's
one.
He's donating a kidney to somebody, I think.
To Richard Lewis.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was weird that, like, during the season, there was talk of, like, there was an episode where, like, they were talking about Richard Lewis was going to put Larry in his will, like, when he dies, in hopes that Larry would put him in his will. It's like, oh,
Landry
wow.
Larry and Richard Lewis arguing about who's going to live longer.
Yeah. Yeah. Weird timing.
Yep.
He did not look well in this season, I would say. He kind of looked like a skeleton.
Yep.
So, all right. Let's curb your enthusiasm. Anything
also,
else?
Also, since Larry David always looked like an old man, it's shocking how much younger he looked compared to now in the clips.
Yeah, he's always looked like 60 years old.
He's always looked like an old man, but when you see clips of then versus now, it's like, boy, he looks a lot older now even.
Yeah. Like his hair is just more white and yeah.
Yeah.
Does look shockingly different.
Anything else, Jack?
I watched a terrible movie. I think it was on The Cock. Night Swim.
All right, I've seen commercials for this.
Yeah. I had very little hopes. I had not heard good things, but you know what? At first, like the first couple, maybe 20 minutes or so, I was like, you know what? This isn't terrible. It's got Wyatt Russell. See, he's always good. I like that guy.
U.S. agent.
Yeah. Yep, yeah. That's him. And Carey Mulligan, who I think was up for an Oscar last year.
Yeah.
Now she's in Night Swim. she was in Better Call Saul, so that's good. I'll always know her from there. But yeah, so they kind of play a married couple. He is like a baseball player who has MS, so he's kind of dealing with, you know, losing his career and stuff like that and, you know, trying to recover and stuff like that. And they got two kids. They move into this new house with a pool that's, you know, it's been long let go. Like the old people who were living there had not taken care of it. So they're like, oh, we should bring this pool back. Like we'll fix it up and go swimming and stuff like that. And turns out it's a haunted pool.
Oh, it's a haunted pool.
Dun, dun, dun.
Those are the worst things, haunted pools.
Seems like an easy one to get away from. Just don't go in the pool and you're good. But they tried to do like a pet cemetery type of thing where I guess like if you go in the pool, like it'll kind of make you better. So it started healing his problems and like he was getting better. But it was like, oh, the pool is going to demand a price, though. Like someone will have to die for you to get better. And like, but it wasn't like he had to make a choice like, oh, I have to sacrifice someone to the pool. It was more just like the pool is going to kill someone.
What the fuck is the pool going to do if you just don't go in the pool? You know?
Well, I like eventually it like gets in his lungs so it can like control him and like take him over. And he's got like black eyes and stuff like that. So he's just possessed by the girl who drowned in the pool or something at this point. I don't know.
Okay.
It got pretty dumb near the end.
Yeah.
Somehow the pool was like, you know, 50 feet deep at a certain point because it's a ghost pool and I guess it can do that. It was just like endless.
It's like a ghost pool. Someone pitched that. Hey, it's a haunted pool. And someone said, yes, let's make this movie.
Yep. Blumhouse. They'll just slap anything on. They'll be like, oh, we'll make it for cheap. Maybe it'll make some money. Some kids might want to go see a horror movie.
Yet apparently it's impossible to get a story greenlit about a chimp who is a detective. No one wants anything to do with that.
You gotta make it a horror movie. Make it about a chimp with a haunted banana and you're good.
So, all right. There's that Night Swim. Yeah, I'm not going to watch that one ever.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it.
Anything else?
No, I think that's it.
Well, I told Jank earlier when we were doing Flea Market Fantasy that I did watch some more Love Boat the last couple nights.
Okay, and
one of them, I watched last night, had Todd Bridges on it, young Todd Bridges. He was like small as Gary Coleman. So, yeah.
Look at that.
But the one I watched the other night, though, Tuffy, you know who Horshack is, Tuffy, right?
Yeah.
So Horshack from Welcome Back, Kotter is on the Love Boat. And he's there, this other fella is there with him. And this other fella works for like the Guinness Book of World Records or something like that. Like they don't use the official name because they don't want to be sued. But he's there to watch Horshack because he's going to set a world record for making love.
Huh.
I'm guessing it was a record for one cruise. He's going to make as many bag or just in general. I don't know. But yeah, Horshack, every woman that looked at Horshack, and he was nerdy, usual Horshack, you know, and every woman who looked at him just swooned immediately. And they all just had to be with Horshack. And he was giving it to him. He was going around giving it to him good through the whole cruise. But then he falls in love with a lady. And he ends up one lady short of the record because he can't sleep with anyone else after he falls. And I think I'm pretty sure the lady he fell in love with was on Too Close for Comfort. She played like the cousin April who came in like in season 4 or something or 3 maybe.
We're not going to get that reference.
All right. But yeah, Horshack setting a record for making the love. So how about that? That is wild, wild stuff. Yeah, there's a bunch of other people on last night too. I can't even remember. I don't know. They all blend together. But yeah, I've just been watching the Love Boats. That's it. Tuffy, you've been watching anything else?
No. WrestleMania.
Yeah, let's go. Or Jank, did you want to do a top 11 or save the top 11?
Oh, we can save it.
All right, keep it in the holster.
Yeah.
All right, WrestleMania 40. The biggest WrestleMania ever, Tuffy. For the two nights, they ended up selling like 145,000 tickets. Right?
Yeah.
That is
I mean, I'm guessing most of that was the same 70,000 people, but.
Oddly enough, I don't think. Like, I think they do get two crowds, yeah. Because.
Yeah. That's got to be expensive to buy two nights of WrestleMania tickets, too.
Yeah, I don't think most people can get both nights. But, so they sold a shit ton of tickets. But all right, Tuffy, it opened up night one, Rhea Ripley versus Becky Lynch.
Yeah.
And thought this was great.
This was fantastic.
Becky Lynch and her strep throat.
Yeah, look at Jank. He knows the backstory, too. Jank was following along, yeah. Yeah, apparently.
I was like, oh, man, so many people are going to have strep throat by the end of this night.
That's the only thing. This was in Philadelphia in an outdoor stadium at the Link there in Philadelphia, and it was very cold on Saturday.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a risky move, April in the
They're lucky
Philadelphia.
Yeah. Lord. But Becky's wrestling in 40-degree weather with strep throat. And she's been on her book tour, so she's been traveling all over the place. I'm guessing that's how she got sick. But it was a great match. Both ladies looked good, and there are a couple of cool spots in it. And Rhea won. It's the rightful winner. She should win. What'd you say? Yeah, it was great, Tuffy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, Becky was not on Raw. I'm guessing she's going to take some time off now, probably.
Guessing her and Seth are both going to be off for a bit now.
Yeah, I believe Seth, his knee injury is still acting up, so he's supposed to take off time. And she needs a new contract, too, I believe. I haven't heard that she signed a new contract, so I'm sure she'll just sit out until that happens. But they both earned a break. So you can enjoy some family time there. Hey, Rhea walked out, Jank. She had her own her band playing her out.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Motionless and White is the name of this band. And they're the band that actually she loves this band. And they are the ones who do her theme song. And how would you describe them, Jank? You're a musical expert here. How would you?
Screaming.
Kmart Marilyn Manson is the description I would do.
There you go. That's a good one.
That's just perfect.
Yeah. Kmart Marilyn Manson. But Rhea loves them. And it's a good
one. Yeah.
Someone's got you.
Yeah, I also saw on the Reddit this week because there was someone posted like, so did Rhea copy her look off of that guy or did that guy copy his look off of Rhea for WrestleMania? But that's the way that guy dresses, and Rhea's current ring appearance is inspired by him.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
She is a big fan. All right, next up we had the big ladder match for the tag titles.
Yeah.
Bunch of people
in this match. This was awesome.
Oh, you like this one, eh, Tuffy?
Yeah.
Now, the tag titles had been unified by the Usos and then the Judgment Day, so now they're going to try and separate. Well, theoretically separate them because they had the SmackDown titles suspended above the ring and the Raw titles, so you had to climb the ladder and get – So technically the same team could have got both titles and they'd have still had them both, but that's not the way it planned out or played out. A-Town Down Under. My boy Grayson Waller and Austin Theory, they won Tuffy. That's why I wanted to win. They actually won. How about that?
Yeah, that was good.
I didn't think that would happen, but they won. And then R-Truth and The Miz got the other ones.
Yeah, and R-Truth was great in this match.
Why don't you talk about some of his spots there, Tuffy?
Well, because it's a six-team ladder tag team match, so you don't have to tag in and tag out. And at one point, I think it was the Judgment Day, and somebody else is in the ring, and R-Truth comes up on the side there and starts reaching out for a tag from the Judgment Day.
Yeah, he wanted the hot tag.
Yeah,
he's holding the tag rope, jumping up and down. I'm like, come on, come on. Yeah, it's pretty great.
And then a little later on, you know, he finally realizes, like, oh no, the Judgment Day is fighting against me. So he, kind of remember, he hits like the AA on Damian Priest, I think, because John Cena is his childhood hero, and him and the Miz did the five knuckle shuffle on SmackDown or Raw maybe before this with John Cena. And
Cena came out on Raw the next after WrestleMania, and they had a six-man match.
Okay. Yeah, in the match, he hits, I think, Damian Priest, and then puts him in the pin, 1-2-3, for the crowd to count, even though it's a ladder match. That was great.
Yeah, he eventually got up there. And then when he got up there to get the belt, he stood like on almost like the very top step. I was worried. I thought he was going to fall off that ladder.
He was climbing up. R-Truth did not look like he likes being on ladders. I'll say that.
He did not look comfortable.
He looked very nervous up there.
But it's nice to, because R-Truth is like, you know, 50-something years old, and this is his first real WrestleMania moment, as they say. So that's nice. The crowd went nuts. Everyone loved it. Jank, did you watch these first two matches?
Yeah, I had it on. I don't remember paying much attention to this one, but...
There was also a crazy spot where Ciampa and I think Tyler Bates like just jumped off the top of the ladder, which that looked nuts.
I think you give him the old air raid.
Where
you hold a guy like upside down on your back, kind of, and you jump off and plant him in the ring. All right, match number three: Rey Mysterio and Andrade versus Santo Escobar and Dirty Dominic Mysterio. And we're big Dirty Dom fans here on the show.
Eagles.
Yeah, so during the match, two big giant luchadors came out of the crowd, and they helped out Ray and win the match. And it turned out it was old, what's his face? Jason Kelsey. Who's that other kid?
Some other guy in the Eagles.
The big offensive lineman. I can't remember his name.
Yeah.
But anyway. So, yeah, the crowd went nuts for seeing them. And how about that? It was a fine match.
That was fun.
Good. All right. Jey Uso defeated Jimmy Uso by pinfall. This match, if you like super kicks, you love this match.
Yeah.
But I was not a fan of this. It just
this was probably the worst match of the weekend.
Yeah. When I was a kid, there was a guy named Gentleman Chris Adams, and he wrestled in the AWA, and he really pioneered this super kick, and it was the greatest thing ever. I loved it so much. And now I will be happy if I never see another super kick in my life. Everyone does a fucking super kick. And you see like 12 of them a match now. Not the best match.
Yeah, that was the best match. I think that was something else I saw on the Reddit after this one was people saying like the super kick used to be a finishing move.
Yes.
And I know that, you know, finishing moves degrade over time. But now it is like every match has like six super kicks.
Yeah.
And like,
if you were to legitimately kick someone in the head like that, you would fuck them up. So it should be a finisher.
Yeah.
But they do it like 12 times, you imagine. Yeah, it's not so good anymore.
Yeah.
All right, next up, we had the People's Main Event, and the only reason WrestleMania can happen this year. Asuka, Kairi Sane and Dakota Kai versus Jade Cargill, Bianca Belair, and Naomi. And sadly, the Damage Control girls lost.
Yeah, barely remember what happened this one outside of Asuka tried to spray the mist and hit Kairi, I think, instead of
she hit Kairi in the face, and then she got punched and knocked around, and then Jade Cargill planted Dakota Kai in the ring with a big old, I think it was the glam slam she hit her with, and
okay,
the old thing that Beth Phoenix used to hit. So she got the pin there on Dakota Kai, and it was fine for what it was, but, you know, they're not.
Yeah.
I thought Jade looked all right. That's the whole thing this is about, just getting good. I think on SmackDown the night we're missing it now, but I believe Jade and Bianca wrestled Chelsea Green and Piper Niven, I think, tonight.
Ooh. Yeah, she wrestled Chelsea Green Monday night, I remember.
Yeah, she beat her in like 6 seconds.
Yeah.
All right, next up, Sami Zayn versus Gunther.
This was great.
Yeah, it was
I enjoyed this. Match.
But again, I just don't like the whole, I don't know. For Gunther had this big historic run. Was Sami Zayn the right guy to beat him for it?
Somebody's got to beat him. Who's the right guy?
But Sami Zayn's already a made guy. You know, like, he's already over. Like, usually you do these things to put someone over, like, to really make
them. I guess he could have put Chad Gable over.
Yeah. Like, if you put Gable over, but then you run the risk of Gable maybe not panning out, but I don't know. But I still think, you use this to build somebody or to cement somebody.
Sammy's been working for the last 2 years with the whole bloodline angle and hasn't gotten a championship out of it. So maybe this is his payoff for all that work.
Yeah. I'm guessing it was a thank you to him for doing good work over the last couple of years. But I just think like I mentioned last week, Sammy's in the main event scene now because of the stuff with the bloodline. He should stay there. He shouldn't be going for the main
event. Yeah, but he's not a top guy though.
I know, but still. It just seems like he's going backwards. He's already been the IC champ. It just seems like he's spinning his wheels.
I think this is where Sammy belongs, is fighting for those mid-card belts. Because he's never going to win the big one.
But, I mean, that's the story, though, I guess. Maybe in a couple of years they'll go back to
it. You're not going to get Sammy beating Cody Rhodes
for the championship. Keep in mind, a couple of years ago, people would say you're not going to have Cody Rhodes beating Roman Reigns for the championship. But you never know.
Yeah.
There we go. All right, so... then we have the Bloodline. Oh, the main event already. The Bloodline, the Rock and Roman Reigns versus Cody Rhodes and Seth freaking Rollins. And as
predicted, I remember what happened in this match.
The Rock was bullying the referee, not letting him do count outs or count stuff.
That's right.
So basically they were going to win. And it eventually Roman speared Cody and had him dead. He was going to get the pin, but then Rock won in the tag. So he tagged Rock. Rock came in, hit him with the Rock Bottom, people's elbow, 1, 2, 3.
So yeah, Rock kept going after Seth's knee in this one, setting up night two.
And also, at one point, I think Roman hit the Rock with a spear. So they were teasing, like, there was going to be dissension there. But no, they stayed together. And they were, so because they won that match, then it was Bloodline rules the next night for the main event.
Yeah.
But it was a good match. It was entertaining. It was like 45 minutes, that match.
Yeah, well, it was like 20 minutes of them getting to the ring.
And then another 10 minutes of standing looking at each other at the start of the match. They didn't really do anything.
Yeah.
But, Jank, are you still with us? And did you watch this match?
I did, yeah. I didn't probably pay the closest attention, but, yeah, it was interesting.
Were you entertained at all, Jank?
Am I ever entertained?
I thought The Rock did a good job, though.
Yeah, The Rock looked better than I would have guessed he would look at this stage.
Yeah, his career. Stone Cold did at this age for sure.
He said he did like an 8 week training camp, I think, or 12 week training camp. Like he legit went in and worked to get ready, and so I think it showed. He looked good.
Yeah, he looks good.
All right, so night one of WrestleMania, it was solid, you know? Nothing too amazing. But this Becky and Rhea were that was my favorite. Sammy and Gunther was good
was
in the main event.
Match of the night, I think. Yeah. I thought the tag match was great, and then Sammy was a nice moment.
It's maybe like a 7 out of 10 overall. Or
it's the argument is that this does give Sami Zayn a WrestleMania moment, for whatever that's worth.
He had one the previous year, though, with Owens beating Rusev in the main event.
Yeah.
And he also had that match with Johnny Knoxville, which was awesome. Yeah.
That was the one time I really wasn't entertained.
Well, this Sami Zayn is really Mr. WrestleMania there, I guess.
Yeah, for the last 3 years, he's been doing good work. So, all right. But we should, again, night one was very cold, and the crowd wasn't as lively as you would expect because they were fucking freezing, and it was cold.
Yeah. It was about 40-something degrees, I think, and windy.
Yeah. So night two, thankfully, the weather was warmer. It was in the 60s. Yeah. So the crowd was livelier. Night 2 was something real good, I think. That was really good. So
Night 2 was amazing.
So Night 2 starts off with Drew McIntyre versus Seth Rollins for the...
Yeah.
I forget what they call them now. This is the World Heavyweight
Championship.
And right away, he hits the Claymore. As soon as the bell rang, boom, hits him with a Claymore.
Yeah. And
Rollins kicks out. The match was great. They're just changing. It was almost like a Brock Lesnar Goldberg match. They're just changing big moves, exchanging big moves there at the top. But it went on for a while, and then eventually, Punk was out on commentary as well. That's a key.
Yeah,
should mention.
That's important.
Oh yeah.
And I can't remember. I think doesn't Seth give him like something a stomp on the announce table, and then he throws him in the ring, but. Drew kicks out of it, and then...
Yeah.
I don't remember how the match ended. I just remember what happened after the match at this point.
I think he hits him with the Future Shock and then two Claymores, and then...
Yeah.
I think. But yeah, he hits him with one Claymore, goes for the pin, Seth kicks out, he hits him with another one, then he gets the three count. And so that, during the match at one point, when he's beating up Seth, he went over to... His wife and his buddy were in the first row there, and... He got a cell phone from his wife, and he texted that he put up on Twitter during the match, bored at work, and he tweeted it out live during the match.
Yeah.
Drew McIntyre's great. So, all right, Tuffy, so then after the match, what happens?
So Drew's got the championship. He's celebrating in the ring, and then he goes over to the announce table and just starts talking shit to CM Punk. Cause, you know, he took his title and took away his WrestleMania moment by injuring him. And this was what he hoped for. And this was the greatest thing ever.
I prayed for this and it happened.
Yeah. And then, so Punk just grabs his leg and trips him down on the table.
And then, he gave him the old crotch chop too, before boom.
And then Punk, that's right. Yeah.
And then Punk says, all right, I've had enough of this. But they did a really good job, both of them there, because at some point it was like awkward, like, is this really meant to go this long? Or are they here? You weren't sure if Drew was going off script a little bit, or like, is this supposed to, and then when Punk stood up and dragged his leg, I'm like, oh, okay, here we go. Here's an angle.
Yeah, because Punk had a brace on his arm, that he then, so when Drew goes down on the table, then Punk stands up and takes the brace off. Grabs it in his other arm, and when Drew stands up, he just whacks him with the brace to knock him down. Yep. And then Damian Priest's music hits. Here comes the cash in.
Yeah, everyone's saying, when's he going to cash in? When's he going to cash in? Well, here he is. He's going to cash in now. And he puts Drew in the ring there, and he hits him with probably the best what is that called? South of Heaven, I believe. What do you
think? Yeah. South of Heaven, the big choke slam.
That was amazing.
Or the sit-out choke slam, I guess.
Yeah, Drew really sold that well. He got up high there. It's probably the best one I've ever seen. And 1-2-3, Damian Priest is your new champion. He stole the title.
Yeah. Judgment Day's back on top.
Yeah. You know, I was always jokingly saying he should steal it from Cody, but there would have been riots if that happened. So this is the better way.
Yeah, that wouldn't have worked out.
Yeah, that's made more sense.
This was the more fan-friendly cash-in, and so everybody loved it. And then Judgment Day came out on the stage there celebrating with them, and Rio was looking good. Did you, on Raw, like, they opened up Raw with Judgment Day, I believe, and Rhea and Damian Priest came out, and they were holding their belts up. And while they're holding up their belts, looking at the camera, R-Truth slipped in between them and held up his tag button.
Great. Yeah. Yeah, well, I think they were making their way back up the ramp, and Truth was coming out for a match, and he just snuck in there. Oh, God. He is the best.
Wrestling
shirts this weekend, too, because I was must have lost my mind or something. So I got the Judgment Day and R-Truth shirt.
Look at you. Nice. The next match, The Pride, which apparently is the name that Bobby Lashley has with the Street Profits. The Pride. I had no idea.
Yeah, I've never heard them say that name on the broadcast. Ever seen it on Wikipedia, I think.
Yeah, I'm with you. I've never heard them refer to that either. And they fought the Final Testament of Karrion Kross, Akam, and Rezar with Scarlett and Paul Ellering at ringside. Scarlett looked awesome.
Yeah.
B-Fab looked good, too. B-Fab was on this, too. Yeah, this match was fine for what it was. You know, I don't know if it needed to be on Mania or anything, but it was fine. Yeah, B-Fab hit a Russian leg sweep off the apron through a table with Scarlett.
Yeah.
And it ended with the... I think Montez Ford did the splash on Kerry.
Oh, because that's why they had this, so they could have Bubba Ray Dudley be the guest referee.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, because everybody in Philly loves Bubba Ray.
That's why the table was out there, because he had Bubba.
Yeah. All right, yeah, that's right. Dawkins did the Devon spot headbutt off the top rope and the was up and all that. So, yeah. And, yeah, so Bobby Lashley and the Street Profits win. So Jank was excited. He loves the Street Profits. Right, Jank?
Oh, yeah.
He's drinking from a red Solo cup as we speak. Next, LA Knight, AJ Styles. This is a fine match.
Yeah.
LA Knight won. Wasn't too exciting, but it was a good match. Logan Paul defeated Kevin Owens and Randy Orton in a three-way for the U.S. title. This match was great.
Yeah.
Logan Paul was very good at professional wrestling. We say that every time, but
yep,
he's
sure did.
Very good. Now, Jank, you're young and hip, like the kids. Did you know who that guy was in the Prime bottle?
No, I actually didn't see this match.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
His name is Isho Speed.
Yeah, I guess he's a very popular YouTube streamer, like millions of followers and everything. So everyone knows who he is except those old guys.
Nope.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Really? Yeah.
Every time Logan Paul comes out with that Prime bottle, I know that I will not know who's in the Prime bottle.
But the best part was this guy, he starts talking shit to Randy Orton. Of all the people in the world you could talk, he's one of the ones you don't want to talk shit to. And Randy Orton. Whether, I mean, this guy's in a padded Prime bottle suit, you know? So it seemed like Randy really stiffed him with that kick in the belly. I mean, he really, like a Spartacus kick, you know, or like maybe 300 to kick him in the pin. Like he hammered him with that kick. And, then I think did he give him the RKO on the announce table? Yeah, I think he did then.
Yeah.
Good. So, yeah, that kid took a beating, whoever he is. And how does it end?
I have no idea.
Well, I remember Logan Paul hit the big frog splash, and it was a crazy high frog splash. It was super high in the air.
Yeah.
And he hit it on Owens. But I think that was after Owens probably got RKO'd, if I'm guessing. And
that sounds right, yeah.
But anyway, it was a hell of a match. Logan Paul's great. Randy Orton's great. KO's great. So good times all around.
Yeah, we're like 10 hours into WrestleMania at this point, and all I remember after this is how it all ended. So at this point, it's just kind of a blur.
Well, only two more matches. Bayley defeated Io Sky by pinfall. This match was great. Good job by Bayley. Good job by Io. The surprising thing, Damage Control did not get involved at all. They didn't even walk Io down to the ring. I got to see Asuka dance a little on the stage, and then they didn't even come down. So... a little surprising there. But, it was a really good match. Bayley won, so good for her. And I think tonight on SmackDown, Bayley was out there and Tiffany Stratton came out to confront her. But then Trinity, Naomi. Naomi came out and challenged Tiffany, and I believe Naomi beat Tiffy. So now next week, it's Bayley versus Naomi for the title, I think.
Yeah, that's fine. I guess save Tiffy for premium live event.
Oh, it's going to be Tiffy time. Don't you worry. It's going to happen.
Yeah, Tiffy time in France.
Yeah, I think France will probably be the end of the Kabuki Warriors tag title run as well. I'm guessing Jade and Bianca are going to kick them into next week and take those titles. So,
yeah.
All right, and then the final match of the night, Cody Rhodes versus Roman Reigns. Bloodline rules. Yeah. Take us through it, Tuffy.
This might be the greatest wrestling match I've ever seen. And wrestling, I don't remember even being that great.
It was a spectacle, and it was awesome in terms of like just the emotion and the moments and the surprise. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, the sometimes decades long payoffs to things, you know. Because it started out, you know, took half an hour for them to actually get in the ring and start fighting. oddly enough, the quickest person to the ring here was Undertaker out of everybody who showed up.
Well, don't ruin the surprise. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, Cody and Roman are fighting. Pretty much a straight fight for, what, maybe 15 minutes? Maybe a couple of near falls. I don't really remember how the first half of the match went. But at some point, Cody's, you know, kind of getting the upper hand. And then I think the first person to come out was Jimmy.
Yep, super kick him in the face.
Interfere. Yep. Yeah. Then here comes Jay to take out Jimmy. And they end up going up the ramp, and Jay spears Jimmy off the ramp, a good, you know, 20 feet down to the concrete floor.
Yeah, through some tables and padding.
The giant crash pad they had laid out next to it.
Yeah. But still, it was a good way to get him out of the match, so yeah.
Yeah, get them out of there. And then I think Solo comes out next to help secure things.
Yep.
And
he hits the Samoan spike in the throat, but Cody kicks out.
Yep.
So,
and then there's the trumpets.
Well, not yet, because this is the only thing I didn't like about the match. He hits the Samoan spike, Cody kicks out, so Solo tells Roman, all right, finish him, and he pulls him up, and Roman hits him with the spear, and Solo hits him with the Samoan spike at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
And Cody still kicks out at two. Like, I would have just had them about to go for the pin after that, and then the trumpets hit, John Cena comes out.
That would have been better.
Yeah, I just don't, because if Cody's kicking out of that, he's going to fucking kick out of everything, so what does it even matter?
Yeah.
But yeah, so John Cena comes running down, and Cena has been having Solo beat Cena recently, like the last time Cena wrestled, I think. So he's got beef with Solo. So he comes in, hits the AA on Solo, and he knocks him out of the ring and then hits it on the table, right? Puts him through a table with it.
Yes. Yep, puts him through the expansion on stage.
And then he goes in the ring, and he is confronting. And then what happens? Stuffy when Cena is still on the outside of the ring, and someone else's music hits.
Yeah, if you smell what the Rock is cooking,
the final boss is coming down.
Yeah, with the final boss.
So he comes in the ring and he just beats up John Cena. He hits him with the Rock Bottom real quick and easy, and. Kicks him out of the ring, and he says, you get out of here, you punk. And then he takes off his belt.
And the Rockets. Yeah, and ready to start beating down Cody and help Roman retain the title. And then you hear the bell, and the lights go out.
Yeah. Jank was marking out when he heard that bell. He was like, oh, my God.
Yeah. Just a little disappointed, because even though I've heard plenty of people argue that it's better with The Undertaker than Stone Cold, like, everybody wanted Stone Cold to come out there.
Yeah, that was the thing. Everyone was thinking Stone Cold, and Stone Cold and The Rock had the biggest rivalry. And I read today, the rumor was...
heard the glass break at that point in the match. I know there's no roof on the stadium, but they would have blown the roof off the stadium at that point.
Word on the street is that Austin, they said they couldn't come to terms on financial payment for Austin to make that appearance.
Yeah.
So that's a missed opportunity, no doubt. But at the same time, with Undertaker, what's that, Jay?
Selling all those tickets, you got to have the money.
I kind of think maybe Austin didn't want to do it.
That's kind of my thought too.
So he tells him, "If you pay me this much, I'll do it." And I'm like, "That's crazy. We're not going to do that." Because Austin has said
Undertaker's already doing his one dead man show, so he's right there.
And Austin has said in the past, like his last match was with Owens, and he really liked it. And he said if he were to do anything else, he'd want it to be a big deal, not just like a run in and stun somebody. He'd want it to be a thing. So maybe he just didn't want to do it. But anyway, The Undertaker, it worked. I would prefer to Austin as well, but Undertaker and Rock have history. But the big thing about Undertaker being the final guy here is he's always been like the locker room guy. Like he's in charge of everything in WWE. Like everyone looks up to him as like the final authority in the room and everything. So for him to come out and to say that the way Roman, you're done. You know, this Rock, you're done. Roman, bloodline, done. It makes
Undertaker
sense.
Also has more of a mixed history with The Rock and Roman, and he has the WrestleMania overall mystique about him.
Yeah, Roman has defeated Undertaker at WrestleMania, so he got that. He comes out, and The Rock's going to hit him with the belt, but The Undertaker just chokeslams him and, boom, knocks The Rock out of the ring. Then the lights go dark again.
Disappears.
Yeah, he disappears. Although I guess there is footage someone has of him running up the aisle with a bunch of people.
Yeah. Okay.
But so the lights come back on, then there's Cody in the ring, and but Roman and Cody, Roman still has the upper hand here. Cody's still kind of wobbly, and but so we missed somebody. We missed somebody though before Undertaker and
The Rock. Oh yeah, before the Undertaker comes out, the Shield music hits.
Yes,
and here comes Seth with his Shield gear,
dressed in his old Shield outfit, and blonde hair as well. Some people thought Moxley was going to be
dyed his hair. Some people thought of the show.
Some people thought Moxley might be coming out, you know, because that'd be crazy.
They're better off without him.
Yes, I agree.
We can talk about some more stuff after we finish WrestleMania.
So then, Shield. Seth comes out of Shield. Yeah.
Yeah, I forget who. Seth knocks Seth, so he's kind of leaning in the corner. Cody's leaning in the other corner, and Roman's got the chair.
Rock hears the Shield noise and the song, and he's turned around looking for Seth, and he doesn't see that Seth's coming in behind him with the chair. But out of nowhere, Roman runs in the ring now. He's recovering.
Oh, yeah, Roman's
huge. And he super punches Seth in the face and knocks him out. So Seth doesn't even really do anything here. He just gets knocked out. Boom.
Yeah.
And then The Rock is going out to rip Cody, and then The Undertaker comes in. Boom, boom.
Well, then Roman's got the chair, and he's got Cody on one side leaning on the rope, Seth on the other side leaning on the rope, and he goes for Seth.
Yeah, because 10 years ago, it's already been 10 years ago, turned on the Shield by hitting Roman.
Heyman's promo tonight is this was Roman's one mistake, because he let the emotions get the best of him this one time.
Yeah, and earlier, like when Seth first got in with Cody, they became buddies, and he said, yeah, don't you worry, I'll be your Shield, you know, I'll be your Shield. And sure, he takes the big hit from Roman. So while Roman is distracted with Seth hitting him with the chair, Cody recovers enough to then hit Roman, boom, hits him with like three crossroads.
And yeah.
One, two, three. Cody Rhodes wins. And Jank was weeping.
He loved it. Oh, yeah. Not a dry eye.
And everybody came out to celebrate, too.
Yeah, a huge celebration. How about Samantha Irvin's call? Her voice is cracking with emotion. Yeah. She's like, oh, that was great. And all the baby faces come out of the back. L.A. Knight, Randy Orton, Kevin Owens, Jey Uso, they all come out to celebrate, lift
Cody
up Cody
up on their shoulders.
We forgot to mention Brandy was there. His wife Brandy.
Oh, yeah.
That was the first time Brandy's ever been seen since he's come back. She is so good.
Yeah.
It is ridiculous how good she is. And we also forgot another big return to open up. Night one, Triple H did the announcement, welcome to WrestleMania. Night two, Stephanie McMahon welcomed everybody to WrestleMania. That's the first time Stephanie's been back since she left. And it's pretty clear that she left because she found out stuff about Vince, and that's why she left. And the conspiracy is that that Stephanie is the one who leaked the stuff about the things he did with that lady to the media and everybody. So she could undermine him and get him out from power. There's a lot going on behind the scenes there at the McMahon family, but Stephanie's back. It's great to see her back. Love Stephanie. So there you go. But the main event, everyone comes out celebrating. Cody brings down Bruce Prichard and Triple H, and it's a new era of WWE. Everyone's loving it. Yeehaw. Everyone's loving it. And so what a night. But yeah, that final match, all the surprises, comebacks and everything. Yeah, it was great. It was really well done. I know Jank loved it, so I'm not even going to ask him his opinion because I know he loved it. But,
I mean, it's nice to see Cody get the win. That was cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, there's just no way they could have him lose again, right? Like,
No.
Yeah, you have to put it on. But even though, like, everyone knew he was going to win, but to still pull it off in such a way that it's still enjoyable.
Yeah, still surprises you.
Yeah, satisfying.
Yeah, because that ending was completely satisfying. Like, it made up the two-year build and everything. Oh, it was great. So,
I think I saw people calling it the Avengers Assemble moment for wrestling.
That's what everyone kind of expected, people coming back to help him finally beat the Bloodline. So it was awesome. It's awesome. Night 2 WrestleMania was great. I guess that one Street Profits thing, that match wasn't, you know, it didn't have to be there, but
yeah, but with Bubba Ray out there, it was still fun.
Yeah, it was a great evening. So it's probably a 10 out of 10 for night two.
Every year they say it's the greatest WrestleMania ever, but this year I think they might have an argument.
it would definitely be in the discussion. Yeah. Just because of that ending. So.
Yeah.
All right. That's WrestleMania. Jank, final thoughts on your WrestleMania experience?
It aired.
What a jerk.
I don't know. I keep trying to get into wrestling, and it just doesn't take.
Well, Liv Morgan is feuding with Rhea now. Maybe that'll take. Maybe that'll help you.
Yeah. Get me over the hump, so to speak.
Yeah, if you can't get Liv Morgan versus Rhea Ripley, I don't know what's wrong with you.
So, former tag partners, now feuding. All right. Any other wrestling news, Tuffy? There was big news with AEW this week. Yeah, would you?
Yeah, they aired the shocking footage that got CM Punk fired.
Now, last week we talked about this, or a couple weeks ago, or when I said he had that interview with Ariel Helwani and he described what happened backstage. And you said, okay, yeah, but that's just Punk's version of this story. And then AEW came out and they said, we're going to release the video, what happened backstage, because their ratings are in the toilet right now, and they need to do anything to pop a rating. So, like, we're going to air that this Wednesday on Dynamite. So people were thinking, oh, well, if they're airing this, clearly Punk was lying. And they have video that shows that Punk was a complete asshole about this and that he lied on Helwani. So they play the video, and it is exactly beat for beat what Punk said. Like, exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
Like, they synced up the audio.
Themselves.
They literally synced up the audio of the Ariel Helwani interview where Punk's talking about it in the video, and it's perfectly in line. Everything he says is happening. It made no fucking sense why they would play this video. It just made them look like they're just
Yeah, I had to dig into the actual storyline of AEW. Like, what sense does it make for them to just play this video on their show for a guy who's not even there anymore?
It makes no sense. And I guess
the in-story explanation was that, I guess, Fear the Revival beat the Young Bucks that same night.
Yeah, and the Revival were buddies with Punk. They're buddies with Punk. So,
yeah, so the storyline angle is that the Young Bucks are saying, well, you only beat us because we had to put on our executive vice president caps to deal with this fiasco.
We were distracted. It's so dumb.
And I've never watched AEW. I don't know any of these people, Mike Dell, and it is just like the biggest clown show ever watching these clips this week. Like, this is not good. How can anyone think this is good?
It is awful. The only people that watch AEW are like all these internet wrestling fans who hated WWE for so long that they just love any alternative to it, and they just see nothing wrong with AEW. Like, if you're online in a wrestling message board or something, you say anything about AEW, they all come to defend. It's crazy. These are like the hardest core internet wrestling fans support AEW. No one else does because it's minor league bullshit. It's
also this week. Because, you know, there were people saying, like, oh, they thought Dean Ambrose was going to show up. And I was like, you know, I missed when he was there. I caught the tail end of it. I wasn't watching wrestling during the Shield and his, you know, main WWE run. I was like, this guy must be good or something because people love him and he's like the champion AEW. So I just pulled up a match from, I think, January of Jon Moxley versus Matt Hardy.
He is a
fucking terrible wrestler.
Moxley is a terrible wrestler, yes. His punches are the fakest things ever. But he thinks he's the biggest tough guy ever. But he looks like Alex Jones now.
There was one point in this match I watched where, you know, you knock the guy down and they roll around normally to get him positioned for a splash or a swanton or whatever. Moxley doesn't, like, roll around to angle into the spot. He, like, gets knocked down and then just shuffles in the most obvious way to position to be swantoned.
He is a terrible wrestler.
And then as Jeff Hardy is climbing the ropes, like, normally you see the guy start to recover. He goes from laid out, arms splayed by his sides, to just jumping up and running at Matt Hardy. And it's like, has this guy ever watched wrestling? Does he know how wrestling is supposed to look?
His big thing is he's a deathmatch wrestler. He likes doing death matches where he's like, yeah, you know, cutting and bleeding. Yeah. Every match he bleeds. He's not their champion at the moment. Their champion right now is Samoa Joe.
Oh, that's right. Samoa Joe. Yeah.
But Moxley has been the champion in the past. But yeah, he's awful.
He is terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. And he might be made fun of in the chimp book.
Yeah.
Because the chip book is basically
feeling bad for Renee Young this week because there was another wrestler cutting a promo on
Will
or something, which was
Will Ospreay. Yeah. He's the big, everybody loves Will Ospreay, the independent wrestlers. They all he's the big star outside of WWE now. He's a flippy guy. He's like British Ricochet, is basically what he is. He does all the flippy stuff. But all the internet marks love him. So he finally came to AEW. Like, there was talk that WWE wanted him, but he went with AEW because they pay, because they just throw money at everybody and their schedule's very easy. They wrestle like once a week tops. And so when Triple H was on the Pat McAfee show, he said, he didn't mention Will Ospreay by name, but he said, when people want to come to the schedule, if they don't want to embrace the grind and work really hard, if they want an easy schedule, if they want to get paid to stay home and not, you know, grind, be a, you know, a true professional here, we don't want them. I'm glad we don't have them on our roster. And everyone's like, oh, he's talking about Will Ospreay. So Ospreay got mad.
Yeah.
And he cut a promo where he said, it's funny you're talking about the grind because the only reason you're where you're at is because you're grinding on the boss's daughter, you know?
Yeah.
So, that was the big thing there. But, AEW is a fucking gong show. Why would you play?
Yeah.
All they did was make Punk look awesome in that video. Like, if you don't show that video, there's always going to be rumors. Oh, I bet Punk's lying about what happened. I bet Jungle Boy fucked him up. You know, I bet Jungle Boy pushed. I bet he was throwing shit and Punk was threatening Tony Khan because Tony Khan also said he feared for his life during this.
Yeah.
And all that happened.
You see Tony Khan in the frame of the video.
Yeah, he's sitting
at one point, you do see his arm like weakly reaching out, like, hey guys, just stop, please.
All that happened, for those who didn't see it, is Punk went up to Jungle Boy and they're talking. He says, you know, why are you still doing this shit? And Jungle Boy said, well, if you don't like it, do something about it. So Punk shoves him very hard in the chest and then storms at him to confront him more. And then Jungle Boy, he looks scared as hell. And Punk just grabs him by the head, throws him down into a guillotine, and starts choking him in a guillotine choke. And then Samoa Joe comes in and helps break it up, and then that's it. So Tony Khan was fearing for his life because a guy pushed someone and then put him in a guillotine. And he's like, oh my God, I'm fearing for my life.
It's also the case that in the annals of professional wrestling, that level of fight has happened 1,000 times backstage before.
Yes, it's not a big, that's why Punk said he thought he was being responsible. He didn't punch him. You know, it was just, but even, fights backstage in wrestling, that happens all the time. Yeah, cause they're just internet little kids pretending to be wrestlers. They're not actually professional wrestlers. That's the problem with AEW. It's all just bullshit pretend stuff. These guys aren't actually physical in any way. And, it's terrible. So Punk, he just keeps getting more and more popular, and he's won me over again.
Yeah, I'll say this. I hated CM Punk. I never watched him actually wrestle. He seemed annoying, like a little crybaby. And after all this, I kind of like CM Punk now.
Yeah, again, I love Punk, hated Punk, back to loving Punk. I'm in. Because if that video is shown and he was lying or something, I'm like, oh, here we go, the hypocrite Punk lying, making. But no, everything he said was exactly true. So like when they're playing the video, when they were playing the video during the show, like in the audience at AEW, and they have a very small audience, they were chanting CM Punk, CM Punk. They were chanting. So you played a video that made another wrestler on another program more popular than he is, and made your wrestler seem like shit. Good job, Tony Khan. Yeah. God damn AEW. What the hell? But hey, it did pop a rating though. Like they still got nowhere near a million people, but they that segment where they showed the video got up to 880,000. And then it fell off a cliff right after they
segment where they basically promoted the opposition company.
Yes. They made more CM Punk fans. And we should say on the Raw after Mania, Punk also cost Drew McIntyre another match, so they're still building that feud. I want to hear what Drew McIntyre has to say about this. He's going to have some comment about this whole video, right? He's going to have to say something.
I would think at some point.
That'll be something. But all right, I think that's all your wrestling updates for the week.
Yeah.
A hell of a week for wrestling.
Quite the week.
Jank's a bigger fan than he's ever been.
Oh, yeah.
Fire. Hey, Liv Morgan's coming back into the title picture here, Jank. We're in for good times.
All right.
Rhea's going to stomp her out. Yeah, Rhea's going to murder her, so don't worry.
Yeah.
Alexa Bliss has got to be back soon, right?
I think I read she's back training right now. She got back to training. But did you see Rhea walking backstage on Raw? And, like, she's just walking towards the camera, and then a steel chair comes out of nowhere and hits her in the head, and it's Liv Morgan, and she starts beating up Rhea. So.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, all right, that's the wrestling update. Next week, I guess we're done here, right, Jank? Anything else? Are we done here?
Nope.
Jank's going to go get it done. It's Friday night. He's gonna go.
Yeah.
All right, so I guess we're done. Thanks to Tuffy, thanks to Jank, thanks to Revenge of the Ninja and that little kid.
Thanks to the moon for that awesome eclipse.
And that sweet t-shirt that you'll always have now.
Yeah.
So until next week, pass the Machichi, Governor Gabby.
Thank you very much.